Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, July 15th, 2017. This is episode 1404. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Eero. Never think about Wi-Fi again. Wouldn't that be nice? With Eero's hyper-fast, super simple Wi-Fi system. And now, the second generation Eero is tri-band and twice as fast. For free overnight shipping, visit Eero.com, select overnight shipping at checkout, and enter the code TECHGUY. And by Texture. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or tablet. Try it free for 14 days at texture.com/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage, by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, you know, all that jazz, anything with a chip in it. 888-827-5536 is the number. Why, you might say, do I have such a complicated, hard-to-remember number? Well, it turns out 888-527, because I can't remember it. 5536 is the same as 8888-ASK-LEO. Oh, that's easier to remember. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. If you have a question about technology, a comment, a suggestion, something you like, something that's working for you, 8888-ASK-LEO. Heather Hammond's in here. She'll be answering your phones. The phone ranger, we call her. What's new in the world of technology? I have to slap myself upside the head. What's new? Well, we had our day of action on Wednesday, the Internet Day of Action. Was there any action? I don't know. Maybe if you went to a few sites, you would have noticed a banner saying, hey, they want to take away our net neutrality. I saw a piece on the cable news about net neutrality, what it is and all that. Problem with cable news and net neutrality is NBC is owned by Comcast. Time Warner's trying to merge with AT&T. And Fox, well, Fox is Fox. So between the three of them, not any of them, all of them have what we call a dog in this hunt. Comcast and AT&T are big internet service providers who would love that the regulations prohibiting them from discriminating against some kinds of traffic would go away. That's what net neutrality is about. It's hard to get normal people at all interested in the subject. I don't blame you. There's bigger fish to fry, aren't there? But as an internet user and an internet broadcaster myself, I care a lot about this because really we all need to. We all should. Let me see if I can explain why this is important to you. The internet, well, I mean, I think everybody would agree, is one of the most amazing inventions of all time. Certainly right up there with flight, right? It's transformed a lot of our world. Not always for the good. I acknowledge that. If you work at Kodak, you might not be so fond of the internet or Polaroid or, well, a lot of companies. If you're a realtor or a travel agent, you might say that darn internet. Newspaper publishers aren't thrilled because it's undermined their business model, and they're trying to figure out a new way to kind of survive as a newspaper online. So I understand the internet is a disruptive force, but it's also a very powerful force for communication. That smartphone you have in your pocket, that's not really about a phone. That's about it. That's an internet communication device. And in fact, the phone will become less and less important. We've talked about this before. As you spend more and more of your communication on data, on bits, even voice communication, video. If you use FaceTime or Skype and video, or even just audio, you're not using the phone network at all. It's, by the way, something scares scares the willies out of AT&T. Just like the fact that the internet's replacing television, premium television, that scares the willies out of Comcast, right? Because they made a lot of money. They still do over you paying for the local television channels and HBO. And you know, what's your cable bill? Many people, the cable bills are over $100. Problem is, AT&T and Comcast are also in the internet service provider business. Comcast is easily the biggest internet service provider in the country. And so they're torn here, right? Because they make money on internet. In fact, they've been charging more and more. The cost of cable internet has gone up much higher than the cost of living. I think it was 6 or 8% a year. It's a significant increase every year. And the reason they're ratcheting it up is because they understand that soon that, you know, those HBO and Channel 6 subscriptions are going to start to dwindle away as people get more and more of their television over the internet. And so they're trying to, you know, as revenue goes down for TV service, they want to bring the revenue up for internet service. That makes sense. But what they'd also like to do is make up some of that revenue by being gatekeepers. They want to create a toll road on the internet. See, you pay for internet service. You pay Comcast or whoever your internet service provider is for access to that beautiful global network where all this stuff is happening. Nowadays, I bet you get your news. You certainly communicate with family and friends over the internet, whether it's on your phone or on your computer. A computer without the internet is just a glorified calculator. A smartphone without the internet is just a phone. just a phone. The internet is what powers all of this stuff. But you pay for internet service, frankly. And so, by the way, so does Comcast. Believe it or not, Comcast pays to get on the internet. And Netflix pays to get on the internet. And YouTube and Amazon all pay to get on the internet. Everybody's paying. But what Comcast would like to do is make a little extra, little money on the side by charging a toll so that if Comcast... So if Netflix wants to get to you, if you want to watch Netflix, they want to charge Netflix a little bit of money, too. They say Netflix, actually, they used to say, AT&T used to say, Google is free riding on our network. No, that's not it at all. They're not free riding on your network. That's called the internet. That's the old point of view. You know, well, we have the long lines. We pay for the telephone lines, and anybody who uses them ought to pay us. Here's the problem I have with that. First of all, a lot of new – one of the great things about the internet is people who have been able to become publishers without the great costs of becoming a publisher. You can be a blogger or a post on YouTube or I do podcasts, a lot of podcasts. I make my living really most of the time with podcasts. Even this show is a podcast that we put out and we sell advertising on. But if Comcast decides to come to me and say, well, you're going to have to pay for access to our customers, that's a big business expense that I didn't plan on. I'm already paying for internet access. We pay a lot of money, thousands of dollars a month, to put our shows up on the internet. And now Comcast wants to set up a toll road to its particular customers. And as a customer, you shouldn't like that because essentially that's going to discourage young, innovative, new companies and encourage the big, see, Netflix doesn't care. They can afford it. YouTube can afford it. So that's the idea is the internet was created with this notion that anybody can be on it and everybody has access to everybody else. It's kind of a free and equal distribution spot. But these big companies that provide you with internet access would like very much to charge for access to you. They essentially want to say, well, you can't have access to Leo unless you pay us extra. That's, on the one hand, greedy. Believe me, they're profitable. They're making plenty of money. And on the other hand, it causes a real issue because these companies are now, deciding who's the winners and losers. It's not any different when T-Mobile or one of the other phone companies says, well, you can get Spotify. That won't cost you anything. But if you want to watch Leo's podcasts, that's gonna use up your data. That's kind of the same thing. Even though they're not charging anybody, in fact, this is a hard one to convince consumers because as a consumer, don't we like that? Oh, free Spotify. I love that. Free. But what it does is it prevents Spotify competitors from coming along. It blocks them. It puts T-Mobile in the position of choosing winners and losers. We want people who've grown up with the internet, who understand the internet, people who broadcast like I do on the internet using podcasts, people who blog, people who post videos, All of us want free and equal access across the board. We're paying for our access. You're paying for your access. There should be no third party in between us saying, I want more. And that's all we're saying with net neutrality. It's a difficult concept. The problem is there are rules to prevent this kind of discrimination, but the FCC is about to throw them out. And really the best thing for you to do if you care about this is to contact your member of Congress and say, no, please vote to preserve net neutrality. Tell the FCC to preserve net neutrality. That's all it would take. A phone call, a letter to your member of Congress. I bet you have some other things you want to tell them too. You could do it all in one. 8888-ASK-LEO. What do you want to tell me? You give me a ring. We'll talk. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger. She's here answering your calls. Hello, Heather Hammond, phone ranger.
Reporting for duty, chief.
Yes, ma'am. Tell me, any great Heather's a rock and roller. She goes out to the concerts. Any great concerts lately?
Yes. There's too many for a girl to get to.
How many shows a week do you go to? Seriously.
Well, lately I've been getting in two or so.
Because you used to work, though, promoting bands, so that... Mm-hmm. That was part of it, is that that was your job.
Yeah.
Now it's just, you just like to do it.
How could you call it a job?
It's not a job.
It's a dream job.
I'm very proud. See, we're very middle of the road, Lisa and I. We just got tickets to see Bruno Mars.
Oh, but that's going to be amazing.
It'll be fun. That's November.
You're going to want to be able to dance like him.
Yeah. I'm going to come back. I'm going to wear my pointy shoes, slick my hair back, do the shuffle.
Can I give a word of advice?
Yes, ma'am.
Don't try to do the splits.
I did that one New Year's Eve. I must have been a little bit happy. It was a quick end to the New Year's Eve party. I hobbled. Fortunately, I was at a neighbor's, so I hobbled home and got in bed.
At least we didn't have to call an ambulance. But I put the bubbles into you.
Well, just the two most painful words in the English language: groin pull.
Ooh,
not a good.
Yeah, it just doesn't sound
not
right.
A good thing. Yeah. So enough about my injuries. Who can we talk to on the phone today? I see you've lined up some good people here.
I love Jim in Huntington Beach's question because he has hit on something that I think a lot of people might be aggravated with.
How fun! That sounds great. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Heather. Oh, well, let me press.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. What can I do for
you? About Waze.
Waze. W-A-Z-E.
I use Waze a lot, and I have a pretty quick commute. I mean, it's about a 30-minute commute to and from work. But sometimes Waze will say, oh, take this back alley. Keep down this way. It can take me 30 seconds. Is there a way to do, you know, unless you're going to save me 5 minutes, this is my preferred route?
Oh, that's a good question. When that happens to me, I ignore Waze. You know, we're spoiled, aren't we now? Because, frankly, if you had told me 10 years ago, oh, yeah, your phone will tell you a secret way that will save you, well, 30 seconds isn't much, but save you 5 minutes, I would have said, oh, come on, how would it know that? And, you know, I haven't looked at a map in years. We're really spoiled by this. Yeah, I mean, let me look and just see real quickly. Have you looked through the settings? There's no way to say, don't redirect me.
I can't find it.
Yeah, it seems like there should be. You know, I only want changes if it can really benefit me.
Right.
You know?
Part of the problem, though, is you can't tell if it's a 30-second or 30-minute save, right? You know,
I just ignore it, and it'll reroute if you keep going the old way. It'll reroute. But, for instance, right. My wife often... to avoid the highway, we'll take a back way home. It'd be nice if you could tell Waze, hey, you know, show me the back way, but you can't. It's just gonna. You can choose fastest way, shortest way, and that's about it. And you're right. I'm looking. You know, you can avoid toll roads, avoid freeways, avoid ferries, reduce difficult. I like reduce difficult intersections. That's that's an interesting setting. But I don't see anything in ways to don't allow dirt roads. That's a good one. but I don't see anything that says, hey, it's got to be, you know, 3 minutes or more time saving. I would just say ignore it. Yeah.
I wish they had something like that. Maybe somebody from Waze is listening. They can help us out.
Waze is still a great thing. I mean, Waze will tell, because what it's doing is gathering crowd information from all the other Waze users. So if there's a pothole or a cop behind a billboard or whatever, it can let you know, which is pretty cool.
That's one of the things that I worry about, because the one of the freeways I take, there's accidents on there, you know, every once in a while. And when there is, it's a huge thing. So sometimes it says, you know, take this way, and you go, and then you see the freeway and it's fine. So sometimes
it's not always right.
Ignore it and you get on the freeway and you're stuck and there's nowhere to go.
But for every, but for every story about why Waze didn't help you, there's plenty of stories about, wow, it just, you know, it really saved me. So, so somebody's saying Waze, this is an interesting, this is from the chat room. Waze will investigate, let's see, let me read it how he said it, from the Waze forum. Waze reestimates your ETA every 2 minutes, but only checks for alternate routes every 5 minutes. So that's interesting. I don't know what that means. There is a Waze forum. It might be worth checking the Waze forum, waze.com/forum, and ask there. There's going to be some serious Waze. There are serious Waze users.
Right.
The neatest thing about Waze, I'm glad you mentioned this, is they just released the ability, if you go into a voice directions, to record your own voice or somebody else's voice. So you don't have to listen to Amy anymore, or Jane, or Nathan, or Randy, or Mr. T. You can now have your own voice giving you directions. Or, you know, if your spouse consents, you could have her ways with her your voice and your ways with her voice or something like that. Just for fun. I wish they would allow you, as TomTom did for years, more celebrity voices. There was a whole market of voices for TomTom. That's a great question. I'm glad you mentioned it. You're still going to use it, right?
Oh, I use it. Yeah, that's religiously. I always use it. And sometimes, you know, we argue and sometimes it's
yeah,
a lot,
but you don't have to agree with it.
Right.
Amy's just making suggestions. You don't, you can say, no, thanks, Amy. I'm moving on. You know, it's not perfect, but that's what I was kind of getting at the beginning. It's amazing what it does do, you know? I mean, yeah, it's not perfect, but it is amazing that we've got this, even this.
It's not perfect, but it's way better than what we used to have.
Absolutely. Sure. Bringing out the Thomas Guide maps, right? And plotting our plotting our route.
And worse, you pull out the Thomas Guide, then you go to a new county and you don't have that Thomas Guide.
Right.
It's horrible.
You stop at the gas station for the maps. Hey, Jim, nice to talk to you. I appreciate it. Pretty soon, kids, I wonder, you know, a kid born today will have no idea what we're talking about when we say map, really. I guess they'll know maps, but there won't be a paper thing. It's funny how, though, this stuff sticks around. We still have the icon for your phone on your smartphone. It doesn't look like a smartphone. It looks like one of those old phone handsets. And I wonder how many kids recognize that. How long before the play, rewind, fast forward button makes no sense whatsoever to people? times are changing very, very rapidly. That's for sure. Teresa in Honolulu. Aloha, Teresa.
Hi, Leo.
Hi.
I have a lot of problems with spam.
Oh, don't we all?
Yeah, I have a PC. I have Windows 10, and I use Outlook to retrieve, you know, all my email.
Who's your internet service provider? Who provides the email?
Roadrunner.
Yeah, and that's your problem. So I'll tell you what, I need to take a break, but I think this is a big subject that I'd love to cover, which is why some of us don't think about spam at all, and some of us are still suffering. About 80 or 90% of all email is still spam, but I just don't see any because I've got a way of avoiding spam, and it doesn't cost a cent. So we'll talk about that when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Normally at this time, Scott Wilkinson would be joining us. He's taking the week off. It's a No Home Theater segment. But I appreciate this opportunity. We've been talking to Teresa in Honolulu. She gets too much spam. Now, there's two ways to kind of filter for spam, locally and on the server. Most good email providers now have spam protection. apparently Roadrunner, your internet service provider, does not. So that means it's up to you to do it locally. And generally that means buying software that will go through your mail and protect it. And there's a lot of those, only my email and .com and so forth, where you can filter your spam through it. But truthfully, and I used to pay for a service that would, you know, I'd pass my email through the service. Here's my deal with spam, Teresa, and I think you'll agree with this. I consider it sewage.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I think of spam filtering as sewage treatment. You need a sewage treatment facility. The best sewage treatment facilities have three stages. And so I have a three-stage spam solution that works pretty well. First of all, what you might want to do, and this is something you can consider it, I generally find that the internet service providers email services are limited and usually not very good. But I understand you don't want to get rid of your email address. You've told
I've had it for years.
Yeah, you've told everybody you're at rr.com or whatever. So what you could do is, you may even already have a Google account, is sign up for a Gmail account. And one of the things you can do in the settings of Gmail is say, get my email from Time Warner. You set it up. You'll have to get the settings from your internet service provider and then go into the pop and email forwarding section of the Gmail settings and say, collect the mail. I do this, by the way. Collect the mail from Time Warner. The reason you want to do that is because Gmail has very high quality spam filtering. One of the reasons Gmail works so well is it's what we call a collaborative filter. When people use Gmail and they get spam, which happens still, I mean, there's always some spam, but I mean, very rarely. I might get one or two spam messages a week in my Gmail. When they get spam, they mark it as spam. And if enough people say that was spam, Gmail's servers learn and go, oh, yeah, okay, and they block it for everybody else. So collaborative filtering is the best because nobody's better at spotting spam than humans. You know, the computers can do it, but spammers are smart, too, and they always try to outwit the computers. So I find Gmail's filtering very good. There's two things you're looking for with Sandy spam filtering. You want it to be so accurate that it gets most of, or if not all of, the spam, but you don't want it to be over-aggressive and it gets some legitimate email. That mail from, from the bank or whatever, you want to make sure you get that. And I find Gmail to be spot on 99% of the time. So one way to do this, and this is what I would consider the first stage filtering in your sewage treatment plan. Then once Gmail filters it out, you can use Outlook, which is what you use now, to collect the email from Google. Just change your settings. Outlook's right now going out to Time Warner. Instead, have it go to the Gmail server and download it. It's exactly the same. And you can then use Outlook to filter again, because Outlook does have anti-spam. It's just not nearly as good as Google, but it might be helpful. Even more helpful in my mind is the filters you can write in Outlook that will help you categorize email. For instance, one form of email I don't want, but it's not technically spam, we call it bacon. It's email you might have signed up for, a newsletter, or, you know, you might have agreed when you signed up for a service that, yeah, you can email me. Stuff you don't really want, but you did agree to. That you can filter out because it almost always, for instance, has the word unsubscribe in the bottom of the email. So what I do is I have an unsubscribe filter. Whenever I see that word in an email, I put it in a special folder. I check that folder from time to time, but generally speaking, that gets rid of almost all of the newsletter and bacon type spam that I don't want. So that's a good way to do it. There's an additional way you can do, if you find the Gmail isn't doing a great job, there are third-party Gmail plugins that you can use. I just signed up for one called SaneBox that it attaches to your email. It would work with your Time Warner as well. And it's designed to clean up your inbox by noticing what you keep, what you don't keep, what you read, what you do keep. You can if you get a message from somebody you don't ever want to see again, they have a folder called the black hole that you put it in, and they'll make sure you don't get that anymore. So this is additional. I would call this the final stage filtering in your three-stage sewage treatment plan. If you wanted to pay for a service, because it's not a free service. There are other services I mentioned, like Only My Email, that do similar things. So, but frankly, the best thing you could do is to filter your email through Gmail. If you don't want to do that, there are programs you can buy, like, as I mentioned, SaneMail and Only My Email, that will do the same thing on your Outlook or your Time Warner account. I like to filter spam server-side as opposed to in my client, because I don't want to fill up my, I don't want to use my bandwidth downloading spam, right? So you'd like to get rid of it at the Time Warner side before you even try to download it.
Correct, right. Is that possible or not?
Well, I don't know what Roadrunner offers, but obviously it's not very good. So services like Only My Email are interesting. So what Only My Email does is it doesn't change your email address. You have to, it's a little tricky. You have to set it up to get your, to, basically as a, in the middle, in between Time Warner and the incoming email, it filters it before it gets to Time Warner. And it actually does a very good job, but it's not free. So that's another one to look at. The reason I recommend Gmail is because it's free and it works as well as anything out there.
So with the Gmail, first I would do the Gmail operation, and then I would do it again in Outlook.
Yeah, let me explain one more time the pipeline here. So you're still, people are going to still email your you know, whatever it was, Teresa at TimeWarnerRoadrunner.com, whatever it is, Teresa at RR.com. But what will happen is when it gets to Time Warner, every 5 minutes or however often you set it, Gmail, Google will go out, collect it, as if, as, same way you collect it in Outlook, but they'll collect it into Gmail. And in that process, filter out spam. Then, so now it's sitting, all the email you got is sitting on Gmail, filtered out. That is another advantage to that is you can always go to Gmail to read your mail if you're not at home, right? Then you can set up your Outlook at home to get the mail from Gmail. I think, frankly, that's all you need to do. But if you wanted to do additional filtration, yeah, Outlook has anti-spam filters as well that you could turn on.
Okay.
Obviously, they're not doing that well, right? Because you're still getting a lot of spam.
Yeah, I don't know how many I get a day, but I'd say at least 10 or 20.
Oh, yeah, I get none. Spam filtering has gotten really good. And but internet, typically, it's very typical of internet service providers that they don't give you very good spam filters, if any.
Right, and it just gets annoying because if I don't look, because I don't even use email all that much anymore.
It's one of the reasons people stopped using email, right?
Well, yeah, because I mean, mostly I'm using text messages
right.
more than email.
What you'd like is just the stuff you want to see in your email inbox. Maybe it would be one or two messages a day or fewer, but that's all you'd like to see.
Right, and then if I don't look at my email for a few days, there's just hundreds of spam in my email box.
You know, spam has not gone away, but fortunately we've gotten good at filtering spam. And that's the good news.
And it's the same spam over and over
oh, yeah.
and over again.
And that's where Gmail you'd see it. If you saw it, you'd see it once. You'd say, hey, Gmail, this is spam, and then you never see it again. I really suggest doing this. I think it's a very good solution, and it's what I use, and I don't see spam. I highly recommend doing that. Or if not, then Only My Email is a great solution that really works well to kind of in the same way as Gmail. But Gmail's free. 8888 Ask Leo. I know how you feel. Spam is a nightmare. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So this is interesting. I guess it is getting better. Depends who you listen to. So this this statistic comes from Statista, but I wonder where they're getting their information. But so let me zoom in on this so you can see it more clearly. Global spam volume as a percentage of total traffic month by month. And so this is January 2014, 65%, 69%. The peak was April 2014, 71%. That's a low number. I think it's higher than that, but that's the number that this is quoting. Then it went down a lot in 2015. The low was September 2015. It was only half. It's gone up and down since, and it's now March 2017, 56%. I would like to know where they got this information, because I can show you other articles that claim a much higher percentage. But it's interesting if that's the case. Yeah, BBC, spam levels at a 12-year low. So it's now only about half. You know, and if that's the case, it's because it doesn't work as much anymore. Or because spammers have found other technologies. Leo Laporte, the tech. I think Frank Sinatra, believe it or not, called that the most beautiful song ever written. Am I wrong? Maybe I'm wrong. I believe that's my memory. I used to be, you know, a...
Something.
Something. Oh, you're right. It was Something in the Way She Moves. How did you know that? You must be a Sinatra fan. John Slonina corrected me. You're right. I think While My Guitar Gently Weeps is the most beautiful song in the world. So there. Take that, Frank. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Chat room said, well, you never told us your three-stage sewage treatment plan for spam. All right, I'll tell you my plan. It's complicated. But I really don't get any spam anymore. And a lot of this doesn't... I think if you use Gmail, you probably don't need to use anything else. But if you send me email to leo@leoville.com, which is my personal address, but I use it for everything, that's a reflector. There's nothing there. It bounces it to Gmail immediately. So I tell people to do this, by the way, because if I decided one day I didn't want to use Gmail, but I wanted to use Outlook Mail, I would just change where the bouncer bounced to, but you would never have to, I would never have to tell anybody I've changed my address. So it's really a nice idea to register a domain name, you know, laportemail.com or whatever, and then use that. It costs about $9 a year to register a domain name, and give that out, put that on your business cards. It's more professional looking anyway, right, than Laporte, you know, @gmail.com. And it has the added benefit of, you can move around all you want. It's only a redirector. So most domain registrars will let you set this up. So it then bounces to Gmail. The other advantage is you can use a very obscure, non-memorable email address for Gmail, which is, I highly recommend. You shouldn't be leolaporte@gmail.com. You should be leo2739999 or whatever, because spammers will use all the obvious names. There was a guy some years ago who had his email address was jim@aol.com. He can't use it because it's such an obvious address that he gets every spam. Every spam message in the world is sent to him, so he never could use his email. So don't, you know, it's fine to have a public address with your own domain name. Spammers won't guess that. But if you're using a service like Gmail or AOL or Outlook, you know, don't just use your name. Use something obscure. Problem is, you don't want to hand that out. That's why I use the redirector. So he sends it to Gmail. Gmail does a very good job of getting rid of the filtering. I do use a third-party plugin on my Gmail for additional categorization. And it's kind of, it's called SaneBox. It's a paid service. I think I paid, $100 for a year. But it does additional categorization. Although most people, I think, would find Gmail's spam filtering and categorization adequate. I add another filter because I do get a lot of mail I don't want. I then collect my mail from Gmail to a service called Fastmail. Fastmail.com. Fastmail is a paid service, an IMAP service provider out of Australia. I like them because they have very sophisticated filtering tools. You can write a script if you want. So I have a Fastmail script that then further processes the mail. That's where, for instance, I have that rule. If it says unsubscribe, put that in the newsletter folder. I'll look at that some other time. So Fastmail does that. They also have spam filtering through Spam Assassin. So I use they have a program called Spam Sieve, or actually I think it's just Sieve, that lets me filter my email. Spam Assassin, which categorizes email. That's second stage treatment. And then I collect it in my local email program from Fastmail. So now we have two stages. Gmail, stage one, really gets the lumps out. and then that has additional filtering there. Fastmail, where it's got some very specific filtering for me, because I know I don't want to get any mail. I don't get mail from Russia. So I just assume if it comes from a .ru or a .cn email address, put that in the spam folder, okay? Or maybe in a halfway folder. Like, you should check this, but it's probably nothing you want. But But that may not be for you. Those are personalized filters. So use those personalized filters at Fastmail. And then it comes to my local inbox. I use a variety of programs. Thunderbird's a good one. It's free. Works on Windows, Mac, and Linux. And Thunderbird has its own built-in anti-spam filter, which you can use or not. That would be the third stage if you really feel like I'm still getting spam. And that one's trainable. That's a local trainable filter. But I prefer to get as much of the spam out on the server because I don't want to download unnecessarily any spam. And I, truthfully, I find I don't need to use these third stage treatment anymore because Gmail does a very good job. This used to be more of a problem, frankly, and the problem's been solved, I think, with good filtration, and I think it's one of the reasons. I was just looking at the statistics. The actual amount of spam has dropped a lot. Total spam traffic is now down about 50% of all email. That's probably two parts to that. One, we're sending more email than ever before, and two, spammers are realizing it's not working. Yay! Victory! Those local filters are certainly something to investigate. Email professionals, people who do a lot of email, often have very elaborate organizational tools in their local email program. I actually prefer to do it on Fastmail. The reason is that I can, because I have so many email programs on so many computers and phones, you know, I use a lot of stuff because for review. So that way, I don't have to do any local filtering because local filtering will only show up locally. It's done with Fastmail. That way, by the time it gets to my inbox is complete. No matter where I look at it. So that's my preferred way of doing it. But the good news is it's not as necessary as it used to be. Rick San Clemente, thinking of making the move, huh, Rick?
Thanks, Leo. Really enjoy the show.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, you know, as many, I've been just completely enamored and ensconced in all things Apple for, gosh, probably most of my life
me
now,
too.
Anyway.
Me and too. I bought a Macintosh in 1984 when they first came out, and I've had a Mac ever since.
Yeah, I know. I used both years ago I was in publishing, and we used the Mac for publishing and the PC for business, and I was like, well, this Mac is so much better than a PC, and that was kind of the start of the journey, and so I've had a laptop that I guess I've kind of good life out of. It's an 07, late 07 that finally died, and as the years went by, I became a little less enamored with Apple, I guess. I got an iPhone 6S, and it wasn't compatible with the limitations because my MacBook wasn't supported anymore, and the iTunes wasn't updated enough to support to be compatible with the iPhone 6S. So, long story short, my MacBook finally died completely, and I was having this conversation with a web developer a couple days ago, and he looked at me and he asked me what I did with my MacBook, what I used it for, and he kind of looked at me with like, "What are you thinking? Get a Chromebook, you idiot."
That's kind of he must listen to the show, or maybe this is just the zeitgeist. Yeah, I feel the same way. We have to take a break. Will you hang on?
I'd love to.
There's news at the top of the hour. When we come back, this is an interesting choice, and this is an example, much like spam, of how times have changed. You can't get locked in because times change and needs change. So let's talk about where the Chromebook makes sense and where it doesn't when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Eero, as I mentioned, a sponsor of some of our podcasts, including the Tech Guy show. The Eero is a revelation. I think they really changed the landscape for Wi-Fi. Now, if you're in a one-bedroom and you have no trouble with your Wi-Fi, you don't need the Eero. You know, you can have a traditional Wi-Fi setup with a router and a base station. But if you've had trouble with your Wi-Fi, if you've had buffering, if you've had to try Wi-Fi extenders, or if you've started to run blue Ethernet cables across your living room floor, I want you to check out EERO.com. And the brand new Eero Pro is awesome. It's an enterprise-grade Wi-Fi system that starts with a base unit and then adds additional units, as many as you need, around your house. These new Eero beacons, the new little plug-in ones, are awesome. They even have a nightlight in the bottom. So I have two Eero beacons in our house, plus this main Eero router. The new Eero router is tri-band, MU-MIMO 2x2, so they've really improved the radios in here, the beacons. I find that a system I used to use, we have a 4,300 square foot house, something like that, and I used 5 Eeros. The 3 now is plenty. It works so great with high speed. But I also love, and I want to show you the Eero software, because they've really, that's one of the neat things about Eero, is they're constantly improving the software. Unlike a lot of systems, when's the last time, you know, you got router updates for your traditional router, right? You have to look for it, go download it. Eero's update all the time automatically. So this is the Eero software, and the new Eero Plus is freaking amazing. 37 connected devices shows you what's recently connected. Yep, my Ring doorbell works great. There's my laptops. I can see all of the devices if I want. I can even name them. And here's a cool thing. As I'm going through the devices, let me find one. And let's see. I'm going to say this Google Home. I can nickname it. So I'm going to say Leo's Office. And even more, I can assign it to a profile. So each of us in the household, I'm me, my wife, and of course our son, 14-year-old son, has a profile. I'm going to say that one goes to me, right? I can turn filters on or off. The Eero Plus, and I subscribe to this because I love it. I could turn on safe search, adult content filtering, illegal or criminal, violent, so I can block it. It also prevents malware, ransomware. Now, I have it turned off for this device. Oh, you can also choose the connection, by the way. This is really great. And I know what it's connected to. It's connected to the bedroom Eero. So that's what we were talking about. So this is a true mesh system because it's getting its connectivity through the bedroom Eero. I love this. You can reserve IP addresses. Now, here's the fun part. It works with my Amazon Echo. I can even do it here. Should I do it? I probably shouldn't do it. Echo. Pause Michael's Wi-Fi. Now I've turned off his internet access. He's going to kill me. Oh boy, I'm in real trouble. By the way, he can't say, Echo, turn on Michael's Wi-Fi. It won't work. He has to go into the password-protected Eero software to turn it back on. I love that. So you can control devices. If I look at Michael's profile, for instance, I have all of the stuff working on there to protect him against adult sites and malware and so forth. You see so much information. Here's my gateway. Here's, you know, you could turn the LED off or on. With the nightlights, you could turn them off or on as well. Nightlight settings. I have it set for ambient, which means it will go on when it gets dark, turn off when it gets light, but you can also schedule it. This is just so slick, this software. And by the way, it improves all the time. I'm always getting updates and improvements, more features. I love it that it periodically checks my internet so I know what my speed is. I don't have to do any bandwidth testing. This is the Eero. This is the new software. If you have had trouble with Wi-Fi, I highly recommend the Eeros. They are fantastic. And you can get free overnight shipping if you use the offer code TECHGUY. So if you've been having trouble with your Wi-Fi, go to eero.com. And check it out. If you decide to buy, select overnight shipping and enter Tech Guy as the promo code. You'll get it free. I can go on and on, but I got to tell you, this is the future of Wi-Fi. And I am very, very happy. The Eero and the new Eero beacons, they're working great. EEERO.com. Use the offer code Tech Guy for free shipping. Eero's got you covered. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, devices that talk to you, devices you can talk to. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. That's the phone number. Website is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Let's see. We were talking before the break. I was talking to Rick in San Clemente, who had a very timely question. His Mac has died, and now it's telling, by the way, that the guy, Rick, who told you to get a Chromebook was a web developer, right? because here's a guy who lives on the internet.
Exactly. I have a web-based company as well, and so we were talking about some stuff, and he was telling me his Google. He had a Google phone. He was saying, oh, this is superior to an iPhone. He looked at me and said, yeah, get a Chromebook. That's what I needed it for.
Parenthetically want to say, increasingly worried about the security of Android. And I'm starting to listen to people who are saying, you know, and including serious security professionals, I would never carry anything but an iPhone because the security of Android has now become so significantly impaired. I wouldn't dream of carrying anything but the Google phone. At least that gets the patches every month, right? It's guaranteed to. So I carry a Google Pixel. But I'm starting to come of the opinion that it might be better to stick with Apple just for security's sake. I can't say that for Macintosh. In fact, Chrome OS is more secure by far than any general purpose operating system.
Interesting. Well, you know, when you start looking, I started looking into it and went, oh gosh, I can get this Chromebook for $300 versus it's going to cost me $1,300 for a MacBook Air with what I need. And you, okay, was that worth it? Then you get into the whole ecosystem question.
Well, there's a way to figure out if you can live with a Chromebook, which would be just to for the next week, promise yourself you won't use anything on the Macintosh but Chrome, the browser, because that's what Chromebooks are. It's a Chrome browser and nothing else. So anything you can do in the Chrome browser, and there are a significant number of extensions, including extensions that will do, you know, photo editing and sound and video editing and so forth. But if you can live with that, then you can live with a Chromebook easily. Chromebooks have one additional advantage. Some more modern Chromebooks will also let you run Android apps, a subset of the total number of Android apps, because there's certain things you can't do. But like a mapping application wouldn't work because you've got no GPS on a Chromebook. But when you put Android apps together with all the Chrome extensions, that's a pretty significant operating system. It just really comes down to what you need to do. And that's why the developer said, well, what are you going to do? And then said, you should get a Chromebook. You obviously didn't say something like, I want to design rocket ships. I need to do artificial intelligence programming, although you can do that actually in a Chromebook. Photo editing, video editing.
No, really, all I do outside of the, you know, for the most part, there is some business components to it where I do some writing and maybe some correspondence with Word. But outside of that, I do some light photo editing, resizing, and I'd like to also be able to put watermarks on photos. And that's about the extent of my photo editing needs right now. And so that's kind of encompasses, you know, what I'm going to be using it for. My website's a Wix-based website, and that's obviously all done on the browser.
Right.
So outside
right.
of photo editing, you know,
well,
that's kind of what I'm looking at.
What I would suggest is open Chrome on your Macintosh see if you can – there's a photo editing Chrome extension that I like a lot called Polar with two R's, and see if it can do the watermarking you need to do. What's happened because of Chromebooks, I think, is it's a very rich ecosystem of Chrome extensions you can run on a Chromebook. Now, I would caution you against getting a $300 Chromebook. They're not bad, but they're a little cheap. You might end up spending $500, still less than half what you'd pay for a MacBook. But Asus, and Samsung both make aluminum body Chromebooks you'll feel much more at home with better screens, better keyboards, better trackpads. And I frankly think that it's worth spending a little bit more on a Chromebook. You also want, I think, on a Chromebook to make sure that you get one that has at least 8 gigabytes of RAM. Some of the cheaper ones only have 4, and frankly, I prefer 16. And that's only for... Remember, you're not running multiple applications, but there are a lot of people who have many, many tabs open in Chrome. And if you're one of those people, having more memory will help.
Okay.
If you only use one tab at a time, I'm kind of funny about that. I close tabs if I'm not using them. But a lot of geeks keep hundreds of tabs open all the time. And I say, what are you doing? How can you? But that's what they like. So those people need more RAM. I wouldn't worry about the processor, although you can get, there are some Chromebooks that support i5. The best Chromebook ever made was as expensive as a Macintosh. It was from Google. It was called the Pixel. And that had an i5 processor, 16 gigs of RAM. It was a beautiful device, but nobody wanted to spend $1,200 for a Chromebook. So I think if, but I think if you get a $500 Chromebook, the Samsung, I really like the Samsung. I've bought two of them so far, one for me, one for my daughter. Chromebook Plus from Samsung. It has a stylus, touch screen. It has some things you're going to say, oh, this is even better than a Mac. It folds over. It's a two-in-one, so you can use it in a tablet mode. Asus also makes something similar, the C302. They keep saying they're going to make one with a higher-end processor, with an i5 processor and 16 gigs of RAM. I haven't seen it yet. That's the one I would hold out for if it were me, only because I like all that power. But I have to say, the Samsung Chromebook Plus is a very, very good. And boy, it's light. It's 2 pounds. I think it's comparable to a MacBook in many ways.
Do you have an opinion on the Acer 14?
Yes, that's a very good. That's also aluminum, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Very nice. So that's okay. That's another good choice. Yeah, Acer makes some very nice Chromebooks as well.
So then the other part of the question I have is on, you know, my whole world is my emails at mac.com.
You can keep doing that because that's web-based. In fact, you can use Microsoft Word at Office 365 for free because that's web-based. So it's... You're not going to give up a whole lot. Your iCloud still works. You'll have to pay for it still. But that's all. Yeah, that still works. It works in any browser. I don't think now I should check. And you can easily check this. Just use Chrome instead of Safari and make sure all the features are still there. I wouldn't put it past Apple to say, oh, let's put in some stuff that doesn't work with Chrome. But that would be foolish of them since Chrome is 80% of the market now.
Yeah, I use Chrome most of the time anyway.
Okay, so if you're comfortable with iCloud and Chrome, it's no different on your Chromebook. It's a web-based. This is the issue. And by the way, Microsoft tried. Remember, they hired the Pawn Stars to say, well, I'm not going to take that Chromebook. You can only use it on the internet. Well, nowadays, the internet's everywhere. You can use it offline, but it doesn't do as much offline. There's offline editing and stuff, but you want to be connected to the internet all the time. Here's why it's more secure. You can't boot. Malware cannot modify the boot firmware without the Chromebook complaining. There is no malware really. There are some maybe malicious Chrome extensions. If you ever have a problem, there's a feature called Power Wash that will erase the whole thing, start over, does that in about a minute or two. And because it's all tied to your Google account, you log in and you're back exactly where you were before. It is a wonderful system. I use it a lot and I recommend it for students and anybody who doesn't need a general purpose operating system. Say goodbye to malware. Say goodbye to viruses. I think more people should be using Chrome OS, frankly. I really do. I think it's beautiful. It only doesn't work if you need to do an application that, you know, needs Windows or needs Mac. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So does that answer your questions? I don't blame you for being concerned.
It does answer my... I wanted to talk to you. I'm thoroughly convinced that I think that's the way to go with the Chromebook.
And you know, if you get the Acer, which is only $300, and you just go, this isn't going to work for me, you can still get a MacBook and have the
commitment.
Yeah, it's not a big commitment, exactly.
No, exactly. And I'm, you know, the whole Mac, the Apple thing used to be, everything was compatible, and I loved that. I didn't have to worry about doing. But nowadays, it seems like that's not really that critical. And there's many alternatives that are as good, if not better.
Yeah, the spiel I usually give is: in the old days, if you were going to buy a computer, you had to buy it with a general purpose operating system, and the only debate was which general purpose operating system, Mac or Windows. That's
right.
Changed. You can buy a computer now with a very simple operating system. If it does what you need it to do, it's infinitely more secure. You can't download and install arbitrary programs, you know. You open an email attachment in Gmail on a Chromebook, even if it's malware, it's going to go, well, I don't know what to do next. You're much safer.
I love it. I love the idea, the whole thing. Yeah, not being locked into all things Apple maybe is a good thing at this point in my life.
I'm disappointed. Apple's taken, and I don't blame them. It's certainly been a profitable route for them. But they've decided, I mean, how many choices of hardware do you have now with Apple? Very limited. And if it doesn't suit your needs, you're either going to go to Windows or Linux. I mean, I actually am using more Windows machines than I used to. Not because I think Windows is a better operating system. It's not. I'd prefer to use Mac OS, but I need different hardware choices.
Yeah, I'm listening to you talk about the Amazon Echo and all these other devices.
Oh, yeah. The world has changed.
It's changed so much. Before, Apple was, you know, in my mind at least, superior to everything, and so I was comfortable. And
it was.
You know,
I've spent
an Apple guy.
I don't want to add up, but I'm sure I've spent $500,000 on Apple stuff over the last 30 years. Easy. I love Mac OS, but I don't think Apple loves Mac OS. They really love the iOS. That's the future. And iOS is even more constrained in some ways than Chrome OS.
Yeah, I liked it. I was looking into it. I thought, well, maybe can I do everything I need to do on an iPad? But no, I can't because I can't work on the Wix on my website on the iPad.
Ironically, a Chrome, and I like a real keyboard, frankly. That's the other thing Apple has really, in my mind, it may even be the most important one. The keyboards on the new Mac laptops are terrible, unusable. So I ended up getting a Lenovo ThinkPad just because it has a good keyboard. I mean, I type a lot. If typing is not good, then it's not a good computer for me. You'll find the keyboards on Chromebooks are better. Yeah, I'm old too.
I said I'm sold.
No. Oh, sold. Well, I'm old.
but I am old too. I'm not a 20-something tech guy.
Right. So it's a reasonable question. Yeah.
I think I'm going to run down to Costco and grab one of those.
Give it a shot.
Yeah, thanks.
They may have, somebody's telling me they have good open box deals on the Samsung at Best Buy. You might check those too.
I was just in there yesterday too. I'm trying to get as much info as possible, but I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Enjoy. Let me know. Yeah. Call back in a few months and let me know what you decided on.
Oh, I absolutely will. Thanks, good. Leo.
Thanks, Rick. See you.
Take care.
Bye bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I'm another Jersey boy on the radio. Chris in Upland, California. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Leo. I just wanted to comment a little bit on your net neutrality monologue you had earlier.
Please do.
I think the consumer would really benefit greatly by opening up these cable companies to open competition instead of being monopolies.
I totally agree with you. The solution to net neutrality is competition, because if you had 10 different internet service providers and one of them said, well, we're not going to throttle your bandwidth, we're not going to, you know, force Netflix to pay us, you could go with them. But you don't have a choice now. They are monopolies.
Right, they're monopolies. So they can break it up just like they did with the phone companies in the 80s when they broke up Ma Bell and they said, no, you got to compete with other companies. Price of phone lines came down 90%.
I agree.
With cable.
I agree. Now, there is one solution, and the FCC forced the telecoms to, this is why there's so many DSL providers available to us, to open up their network centers to third-party internet service providers. But they always allowed cable companies to say, no, you can't ride on our wires. If the one thing they could do, and I would love to see the FCC do, is tell the cable companies, they won't do this, by the way, but tell the cable companies, okay, but what we want you to do is also offer the options of third-party internet service providers on there. And if they would do that, that would give us competition, right?
Right. I think the power's in the people. If we all lobby
our
congressmen and senators to demand this, we can drive the price down. I just have to get the word out. If you got the word out to your show a lot about
it. I agree. And I think people who say, well, I don't want government regulation, fine. The solution would be a true free market where you had choices. But we don't have that because in this country, most people have at best two choices, the phone company and the cable company.
Exactly. And the reason why the phone company was a monopoly to begin with, they didn't want 10 wires going down the...
Right.
down the street. So the same thing with cable. If we don't want 10 cable wires going down, let's have the same kind of system where we have an open competition on the same lines.
There are lots of solutions. I'll tell you why we're not seeing those solutions offered up. The telecommunications companies are the number – spend more money than any other industry in Washington, D.C. on lobbyists. And so they're really convincing members of Congress of their point of view. They get to sit down and say, look, this is how it is. And members of Congress have to hear from us, so there's an opposing point
Correct.
Of view.
Yeah.
And you can fight money in Washington if you get involved. Because really all money does is buy votes. So if you the voters say – no, we don't want this. It doesn't matter how much lobbying money there is. We will win.
True. Well, we still have the voting. We
still, get to vote.
We get an A on these people.
Right. The problem is people don't vote.
We definitely put pressure on them.
Yep. I agree. Write to your member of Congress. Tell them we want competition and we want a free and open net, because that's what is powering innovation in this country. And that's in everybody's interest, is innovation.
Absolutely.
Hey, thank you. Good point. Really good point. I appreciate it. There are plenty of solutions. There's another solution, which is a little more controversial, but I think is an excellent solution, is to have internet service be run essentially as electrical service is. In many jurisdictions, almost all, I think, the city, the local county, maybe the state owns the power grid. They own the water supply. They own utilities, right? And a number of people have suggested, I think it's not a bad idea, that maybe your locality should own the internet wires, and then they could say to as many internet service providers, and there would be plenty if they didn't have to dig ditches, you have to rent our wires, but you can have your own, you can offer internet service to the customers. The locality would make the money back. They'd probably be very good for the tax base, and you would have choice. But there are two ways to do that. One is very expensive, which is for your city government to dig ditches to replace the cable infrastructure. The other one is really controversial, is using eminent domain to take it over. And I don't think that's going to happen, although it would probably in the long run be good for everybody except Comcast and AT&T and Verizon. They wouldn't be too happy about it. There are solutions out there, and the reason we're not hearing about the solutions is because the telecommunications industry is spending a lot of money on Congress. That's the fact of the matter. Ken in Covina, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ken.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I recently purchased the second generation Eero routers. I bought a set of three.
Me too. Let me know what you think.
And I love them.
You do.
Well, they're cool.
So Eero has been around for a while, and I should mention before we continue that they are a sponsor of some of our podcasts. So disclaimer there. I like to make sure people understand. But I use them, and I got the new one. The new Eeros, they've got a new base unit, which is tri-band. That's an improvement. And they have new beacons, which you just plug into the wall. And I've used the old one and the new one. The new one's working much better in my home than the old one, and I really like the old one.
Well, I like mine too, and I found the setup to be quick and easy.
Good.
And my wife is happy that I'm now getting wireless coverage, Wi-Fi coverage throughout the house.
And that's really why I did it too, for my wife, because you don't like hear. You never want to hear that, honey. The internet's not working. That's
right.
That's bad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and I think I've got some gremlins in the system, and I'm trying to sort it out.
Okay. Good.
So, good. At first, I had some Insteon lights that weren't showing up. And after maybe a day, they started to show up on the system, and I was able to turn them on and off.
I do have to say, and I know this from one of our hosts, Stacey Higginbotham, who is an IoT, Internet of Things expert, that there are Internet of Things devices that don't work well with mesh. Eero is one of the first, and there are many now, mesh systems where instead of having a base unit and an extender, you have roughly equal units all around the house. And sometimes that confuses things like those Insteon lights. And I'll tell you, I know why, and I know both the Internet of Things manufacturers and the mesh manufacturers are trying to solve this. One of the reasons mesh works better than, say, a base station and extenders is it's intelligent. And so it will move things around. It will change channels. It'll even change bands. And some of these IoT devices are not smart enough to handle that. So it looks to them like the signal's coming and going.
Exactly. And I'm having the same trouble with a Yamaha AV receiver, which is hardwired.
And that you shouldn't have. That's interesting.
Yeah. It'll work for a while, and I was listening to internet radio last night. And, you know, it worked for maybe 30, 45 minutes, and then it dropped off.
So it's connected. So you've got a modem, cable modem or DSL modem, which is then connected to the Eero base unit. And right. That has an additional Ethernet port, and you've connected that to your AV receiver.
Yes.
And for some reason...
Just via a switch, by the way. So there's
okay. Yeah, I do the same thing. Hang on just a second. I have to take a break the bottom of the hour. But hang on, because I want to talk to you a little bit. Maybe we'll do that off the air. But I had similar problems. So let me talk a little bit about how I solved it. Leo Laporte, okay, the tech guy. So that's a different problem than the Wi-Fi systems that are kind of confused by the Eero. Usually those settle down over time, I found. I had the original Eeros, and I had the same exact thing. I had it connected to a 24-port switch because in my home theater, I wanted everything wired. And so then I had it all wired into my receiver and stuff, and it failed. I don't know why. And I think that it's overheating is what I'm thinking. I haven't had that same problem with a new Eero. Oh, but I'm not doing it that way. They're back on Wi-Fi. So that's an interesting... I had the same problem, though.
Yeah, okay. So, and here's another weird thing, just to confuse it more. The receiver showed up originally as being plugged into the base station, right. Or the gateway. Now it's showing up as being plugged into the office, which is, like, on the other end of the house.
Oh. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And the office is wireless only?
The office is wired into the same switch.
Got it.
That the gateway is wired into.
Got it.
So it seems like the receiver is just kind of hunting around, and I'm not sure what it did.
One possibility, one thing that might solve this, is picking a static address for the receiver.
Okay.
So the Eero is doing the DHCP, right?
Right.
In the Eero, there's two things you can do, but the best thing, I think the best solution, and I would try this, is to, I presume the Yamaha will let you pick an IP address. If it won't, then it's a little tricky. But if not, you can reserve an IP address in the Eero settings. And make it be the Yamaha address. I think that might help. Do you notice if the Yamaha? Yeah, I don't know. Do you notice if the Yamaha's changing IP address?
Yes. Well, I mean, not when it drops off. So it changed IP address, obviously, when I rebooted the modem. But since then, it's keeping the same IP.
Boy, that's an interesting question. I do think Eero's phone support is very good. So if you can't figure it out, I would call Eero. I tested them when I first got the Eero with a bunch of questions. They were quite good.
All right. I did call them already regarding some Ring doorbells that I have, and they were able to sort it out pretty quickly and reserve some IP addresses for them. So
yeah, same thing, right? Yeah. I think that might be one way of doing it. So then things aren't hopping around as much. It's interesting. Okay. Yeah. There is an Eero compatibility list. We'll put a link in the show notes, but you can find it easily. That shows what hardware it's known to work well with. I use Eero with my Ring, and it's fine. But you know, it's funny. Things happen. I don't know. It's because, in my opinion, it's because these systems are managed by remotely by Eero.
Right.
And I think they do funny things.
The interesting thing about the Ring is that the Ring is it likes a 2.4 only.
That's where you get problems.
Yeah, if your Eero is too close to the ring, it tries to get onto the five point.
That's right.
Whatever it is.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think that's where you get problems. So, you know, to the degree that you can say to a device, no, this is your IP address, this is your band, this is your – don't mess with it, I think that will probably help. You know, my ring works fine, which is weird because it's not on the compatibility list. But yeah. I've never had trouble with my ring, oddly enough. I move around. I've tried all them. You know, I have actually two networks now. I thought this was going to really be a nightmare. I have a Plume and an Eero running on two different networks, but they work well. Well, I'm testing them, so I have two Comcast connections. I have a business class and a home class. Anyway, I got to run, but I think that at least that's worth a try.
All right, Leo.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking about these new mesh systems and the new Eeros. Our last caller is having a little trouble with, weirdly enough, a hardwired device. And I have to say, in general, and again, a disclaimer, Eero's a sponsor of some of the podcasts. But I have to say, in general, these mesh systems are really a new way of doing Wi-Fi. That's why, you know, I like them. I recommend them. Not just Eero, but almost all the meshes are an improvement over your old system of having a base unit and maybe some extenders. But one of the things they do that's different and can cause problems is they're smart. They're maybe too smart in some cases. So this is problematic because they do things like move around. They change the channels. They change the frequencies sometimes from 2.4 to 5. And sometimes they confuse devices that can only do 2.4. So my experience with Eero is, and when I was first reviewing it before they were a sponsor, I really played with their tech support people. I called with a number of different problems and was very impressed. I mean, they stayed on the line with me during reboots and trying stuff. They didn't know who I was. I thought they were quite good. So I would recommend, if you're having trouble with a mesh system, I can't speak for any of the others. I actually haven't called the tech support. I've heard good things about most of them. Try the tech support people because they've been through this problem before and they may have some good solutions. One of the things you can do with an Eero, I would say, of all of them except the Netgear Orbi, has the most sophisticated settings. And one of the things you can do is reserve IP addresses for a device. And sometimes that helps if you just say, this device, just leave it on this IP address. Apparently, Dr. Mom in our chat room, who's also an Eero user, says she's talked to them. And on the roadmap for Eero is the idea that you can say, and this, I think, is the big problem with a lot of devices. You use, you know, this Eero, not that Eero. Switching around can cause a problem. And Eero will do this. They'll say, oh, no, we're gonna send you over to the gym. Oh, no, you should be on the bedroom. You should be on the living room. And that sometimes can confuse these IoT devices. So a setting in the Eero software, which is quite sophisticated, quite good, would be really nice, where you could say, you know what? Leave my Yamaha on that Eero. Don't be hopping around with that. Don't do any management of that. I think that's really where we get into trouble with these mesh systems, is they try to manage the network. And that can cause issues. On the other hand, I have to say, for most people, these mesh systems are better than the... It depends, of course. If you have a one-bedroom apartment, you're not going to need to spend the extra money for a mesh system. But for people who have Wi-Fi issues, you know, won't get upstairs, won't get downstairs, I can't get to the edge, I can't get out to the barn, whatever it is, mesh systems are a better way of doing it than extenders. I think they work. I've been very impressed with them. They work quite well. I have two mesh systems in my house right now. I have the new Eeros. That's the main Wi-Fi, and then I have. This is a luxury, I acknowledge, but it's a good security thing. The Internet of Things are on a separate network. I've been in the process of moving the Sonos speakers, the Ring doorbell, the Echo. I have a lot of Echo units onto a isolated network on the Plume routers. Reason being, sometimes security issues with some of these IoT devices allow a bad guy to kind of get into the IoT device and use that as a gateway to the rest of your network. You don't want that. So it's a good security procedure to isolate the IoT devices. There are other ways to do that. Many routers will have a way to do that. if you can, it's a good idea. It's a luxury, I admit, but it's also helpful because I can test these other devices too. I have two networks in the house. Laura, Los Angeles is next. Hi, Laura. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
Shout out to the chat room. Thank you. On Amazon Prime Day, I bought an Echo because it was suggested.
You're listening to me too much, and I love my Echo, so you...
Oh, God, I'm so sorry.
I love my Echoes. Are you kidding?
You're listening to me,
Joe. Oh, now I'm getting an echo of me. Turn the radio off. That's a different kind of echo. We're talking about the Amazon Echo.
I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. Yeah, I think you have the an internet stream going or something.
Talking about the Amazon.
I'm so sorry. I thought I had it off. I'm sorry. Okay. Okay, you know what? You can hang up on me.
I'm not going to hang up on you. I'm going to put you on hold, okay? Get that off, and I'll go back to you, Laura, okay? I don't want to hang up on you. What? No. I'm just going to put you on hold, and you can fix that, and we'll come to you next, okay? Trevor in Glendale, California. Hi, Trevor.
Hi, Leo. I have a Netgear N600 modem in bridge mode and use Google's OnHub as a router.
Yeah.
All my systems work well with the Wi-Fi except one older Windows PC laptop. It's always been a bit flaky with Wi-Fi, slow, lots of dropped connection. So I typically have used an Ethernet cable with it.
Okay.
I'm now in a new place, and the router is across the room, so doing a wired connection would be tough.
Yeah.
Is it possible to get a repeater or something to pick up the Wi-Fi signal and then allow me to connect the laptop to that device, my Ethernet?
You can, I believe, get a second Google Wi-Fi.
Okay.
Because those have two Ethernet ports. A lot of the mesh systems will do this. For instance, I use the Plumes. I was mentioning the Plumes. Each of the Plumes has an Ethernet jack. You only use the Ethernet jack once with the modem, the cable modem, or in your case the Netgear. But the other Plume in the house has an Ethernet unused Ethernet port, and you can plug a device into that, and it gets its internet. Basically, the Plumes are talking to each other, and then the device that's hardwired thinks it's on a hardwired network, which it's not, obviously. So that might help with your laptop.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I believe you can. I'm pretty sure. We'll have to check, but I'm pretty sure that. That's kind of in the nature of all of these devices, is that you can use that Ethernet port for as a hardwired Ethernet port for a device.
Okay. I've had good luck with this whole setup, and I have good service, but when I run the DSL report speed test, I always get a really poor score when it comes to buffer bloat.
Yeah. Don't worry about that.
Are you concerned about?
Yeah. You know, buffer bloat is a weird situation that we were talking about a lot a couple of years ago. The idea is that once RAM got cheap, router manufacturers started to load up the RAM on these routers. Why not? They're cheap, and it should improve performance. Except it didn't, because the large buffer on the router screwed up a feature of TCP/IP. And end up interacting with it poorly, slowing down your internet. Now, I thought when this became well known, the router manufacturers would just cut it out, they'd fix it. They didn't. They just keep putting in the RAM. And I notice on the DSL reports speed test, which I use all the time, everything I have, including the latest, greatest, like the Eero's, buffer bloat.
Oh, okay.
So I just have started to ignore it because I figure there must be some way they've fixed this. And there's really not much you can do. I mean, it's a weird thing. I thought for sure people would respond to this. And it may also be, and I should contact the folks at DSL Reports. I love these guys, and I prefer their speed test over all others. But I'm wondering if because I've never found anything that doesn't get a poor score on buffer bloat. So I'm wondering if their test is proper. They're one of the few tests that tests this, by the way. There's another one. If you have Java on one of your systems, you can try. It comes from UC Berkeley. It's called Netalyzer. And Netalyzer also checks buffer bloat, but many other features. It's the best network analyzer. I use it when I have network problems. It's an online Network Analyzer. I'll put the link in the show notes at techilabs.com. Try that. The only negative is you have to have Java installed on one of your browsers. Netalyzer without an E at the end. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's from netalyzer.icsc. Here, let me just put it in the show notes. And they have a, they do have a version for Android. Sorry, Laura. Yeah, I'll be back. Our show today brought to you by a great alternative to buying magazines, Texture. It's kind of Netflix for magazines. Access the world's most popular magazines, more than 200 of them, for one low monthly rate. $10 a month gives you more than 200 magazines. And I have to tell you, there is still great work, great journalism being done in magazines today. You know that. Plenty of magazines that I would love to read, but I just can't afford to spend the money to subscribe. I also don't want all the clutter, the coffee table clutter, to all these magazines. And if you were, you know, you say, oh, I've got to read the Vanity Fair article about Snowden, then you're going to go out and buy it, and that's going to be $5-6. Magazines are expensive. This way, you save a tree, and you get, frankly, a better experience than the magazine experience. Let's look at the catalog, because there's so many magazines. Every magazine under the sun. Pick one. What, Rolling Stone? Yeah, let's see. Rolling Stone. It's there. Let's see all the titles. There's so many now that they don't show you pictures. There's so many of them. The Yoga Journal, Us Weekly, Vanity Fair, Vogue, Health, Hello Canada, Girls Life, Boys Life, Garden and Gun Magazine. I got to get Garden and Gun Magazine. What is it? Is it an Annie Gopher magazine? I'm going to log in so I can show you my Texture here. Hold on a second. Texture is all the magazines you want. And by the way, they look great on your iPad. Actually, I could show you on my iPad. That'd be the easiest thing. It's a great way to read them. When I travel, I love it that I have Texture on here because I don't need to download magazines before I hit the airplane. Here, let's show you on the iPad what it looks like. So I have in my library magazines that I've favorited. Okay. By the way, you can have up to 5 devices. So actually, this is Lisa's account because, you know, we have it, each of us, on our iPads and our phones, and that's only 4 devices. So I'm a big photography nut, right? So I love Shutterbug, okay? So you can, it's downloading it right now. The thing is important, if you like photography, like you're looking at National Geographic or Shutterbug, these images are super high quality because they're not printed, they're on your screen. So you get actually higher quality images on texture.com than you would get if you were reading the magazine. I love it. Very easy to navigate. You can zoom in. You can see anything you want to see. Every bit of every page, yes, even the ads from every magazine, the current ones in the newsstand, back issues, and you get special treats that you can't do in print, like videos and so forth. I'm a big fan. You into stereo equipment, sound and vision. Love Sports Illustrated. Got to keep up. That's the automatic download. So now I'm going to have every issue automatically. So when I get on the plane, I don't have to think about it. I've got Sports Illustrated on my tablet. You can do it on your phone. You can do it on your tablet, Android or iOS. Hundreds of magazines. Wow. Serena Williams. Wow. Hundreds of magazines. Of course, The New Yorker. Got to have that. For $9.99 a month. Why subscribe to a couple of magazines when you can have all your favorites all the time for way less? One of Apple's top 2016 iPad apps. It makes the iPad sing. This is kind of what the iPad was invented for. TEXTURE, texture.com/twit. We're going to give you a 14-day free trial. Just, you know, there's always, oh, look at Amelia Clark. She's the Khaleesi, right? Yeah. Just love it. Texture.com. You love magazines? Do you want to keep up? Do you travel? You're going to love it. U.S. politics, domestic and international news, investigative journalism, environmentally friendly. You get the best magazines and articles. Oh, I didn't show you. They even have curated editions. Let's go back to the front. They even have curated stories so you can find stuff very quickly. Like, here's some highlights. Weekend reads, long reads for the weekend, top 10 reads, So you'll find new stuff all the time. Really love it. Texture.com/twit. Try it free for 14 days right now. See, actually, I want to just stop now and read some of these articles. Okay. All right. I'll save those. Texture.com/twit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. There are other, in fact, you know what? Let's do this in the show notes. Collect other speed tests besides DSL reports, which I like. Somebody passed along a good one at sourceforge.net/speed test. That also tests buffer bloat, so you can compare the results. Of course, everybody knows about the Ookla tests, speedtest.com, speedtest.net. The thing to remember about speed tests is internet service providers know about them, and I wouldn't put it past them. I've even heard anecdotal stories that they do, in fact, speed up if they see you're on a speed test site. Oh, we'll give them an extra bandwidth for that one. They want to look good. But that's not the speed you'll get in general. It's just the speed you get when you're testing your speed. I use NetflixFast.com for that reason. One of the reasons I like that is because, well, and maybe ISPs can test it, but it's coming directly from the Netflix servers. So it's in. I guess it's supposed to give you a realistic idea of what kind of speeds to Netflix you're getting. That's fast.com. But let's start making a list at the website, techguylabs.com. The other reason I don't like the Ookla's, I don't dislike it. It's what everybody used for years. I still use it. But the reason I don't recommend it a lot is because that's the one Comcast recommends on their own web page, which tells me Comcast does know about it. And I don't know if that means that they're boosting results or not. Speedtest.net is the Ookla server. Speed tests are of kind of limited value in some ways. I mean, it's not a real world test. It's like any kind of benchmark. It's kind of a specialized test. For instance, if Comcast is your internet service provider, many of you have something called Comcast calls Burst, which speeds up at the beginning of a download, but if the download goes on very long, it slows down a lot. And so that means, it's not the real speed you're going to get, just a kind of a show-offy window dressing speed. Rick in Victorville, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rick.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, you're my last resort.
Uh-oh.
My first resort, really. I listen to you all the time, but I got a problem. I don't know whose fault it is. I figure maybe you can tell me who to go yell at.
All right.
I have an Outlook account.
Yeah.
And I have an HTC smartphone. And I added 5 new contacts in my Outlook account. And then I wanted to update the phone. So I had taken it off of sync while I was updating the account on the computer, and then I erased my contacts out of my phone.
Uh-oh.
And then I turned on sync, and just I've done that in the past, and then all my contacts go from my Outlook account to the phone.
Yeah, but in this case, they went from the phone to your Outlook account and erased everything.
My computer. Yeah. I've never seen that before. Of course, every time I tell somebody, they go, that's impossible. I've never heard that.
It's not impossible. Syncing, in by its very definition, means synchronizing the two.
Okay.
And what your phone did was synchronize deletions. And that normally is not supposed to happen, right?
I never thought the phone could override the computer.
Well, I guess it can.
that's why I turned the sync off.
Yeah, no, I understand.
I deleted, but when I turned it back on, it should have. Now, I have the calendar and my mail on there also, and it's instantaneous. If I put something on the phone, it's on my computer. If I put it on the computer, it's on the phone.
My suggestion for future reference and for everybody listening is that before you start doing this kind of thing, which is, by the way, reasonable and healthy to do, I would recommend exporting your contacts from your phone or your computer, just so you have a backup of those.
Yeah, I learned that.
Yeah, that way if this happens, so sync, you can always restore it. Synchronization is always a little iffy. How many times have we synced and you get 800 copies of the same, you know, you get duplications like crazy. It's always a little iffy. So usually what I recommend is kind of what you were talking about, which is to pick one source as the phone book, the phone book. Then go, and I usually do this on the computer. And then go through it, clean it up, delete stuff, delete duplicates, merge things, get it as good as you can get. Then, and this is the step you skipped, export that out. Then delete the phone books from every other device and synchronize them. And in theory, you're exactly right. I know this is what you were trying to do. That one on your computer will become, you know, the actual phone book on all these devices.
Well, and it always has been, because I have the Google contacts turned off, and I have it's just
it should have.
But now, maybe you can help me. What I've been doing now, because I had just updated everything that you just said, 149 contacts. I went through and put all the addresses.
Yeah. Oh, updated, man. Did you lose? You lost it all.
And now I lost it all. But what I'm doing now is, as I'm entering them on the computer, then I've been sharing them to OneDrive. But you have to do it one at a time, I guess. There's no way to take the whole contact list on Outlook and send it all at once to OneDrive, is it?
You mean via a sync or just to copy it?
Well, on the Outlook thing under contacts up in the corner where the three dots are, you hit it and it says share.
Right.
And then it gives you different things to share to. I've got all my important stuff on OneDrive for that reason. If anything happens, I've got it.
You didn't by any chance ever? Do you? You don't have Google syncing to Google, do you? By any chance?
It has Google syncing, but I have. Let me switch over.
The reason I say that is if Google deletes all your stuff, you have 30 days to go back. So you may have a copy. If you had been syncing to Google, you probably still have a copy.
Well, my contact sync was turned off for Google, but I don't know what part syncs. And I looked under Google while I was listening to you, waiting for your pick up the call. I went into Google and looked. I can't even find my contacts. I have no idea where Google contacts are.
Contacts.google.com.
Oh, okay.
And calendar.google.com, which actually resolves to google.com/contacts, but that's how I always
say. Okay, so maybe stuff.
Well, cross your fingers. and even if it's blank there, because it's at some point synchronized the empty contact list, you can say to Google, I'll restore my old one. But what I'm trying to do is find one copy that's good.
Right. I would take anything.
I know. At this point, you'd be thrilled to have anything.
I don't even remember numbers. I'm old. Yeah.
Who does? Old or young. You ask a 20-year-old these days, what's your phone number? They don't know. I never dial it. What's your best friend's
number? Because everybody asks for it when you do things. But even my kids, I don't know kids, my grandkids.
I don't know my kids' numbers.
It's in
the computer. Why would I need to remember it?
So now as everybody calls me, and this happened last week, so as everybody's been calling me, I usually don't answer unidentified numbers, but I have to because I have no clue.
You're rebuilding it, yeah. Well, all I'm saying, and maybe you should check an Outlook too and see if there is a restore deleted files or something like that. Maybe even OneDrive has I know OneDrive has versioning, might be able to roll back on OneDrive, just to try to find it. And then in future... A great lesson for us all. Back up before you do any of these fancy cleanup things, because you never know.
Now, is there any way I can put my contacts? Because I'm not a computer guy. I just listen to you. Is there somewhere that I can download, like, from my Outlook account to put it on a thumb drive? Or something?
So Outlook will export into a variety of formats. Best one probably is comma separated values or CSV. It'll export a text file, which you can save all over the place. And if you've done that, or if you've ever backed up your phone, you know, What I'm hoping is that
my phone texts that I save, I email them to myself, and then I just put them in a folder.
You could do that too. You could export the CSV file and email it to yourself and never delete your email. There's all sorts of ways of doing this, and I'm hopeful that you will find an address book somewhere. I feel bad. You're right. It shouldn't happen. But how many times do things that shouldn't happen on a computer happen?
Oh, they happen to me all the time.
All the time. Because I know the computer has in its, whatever you call that, mind, rules, but we don't know what they are, and apparently they're shifting. I'm so sorry that happened to you. Good luck in finding it again, Rick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, that's horrible. I don't know of a way, Rick, to... Oh, he's gone. Are you still there?
No, I'm here.
Oh, yeah. I don't know of a way, like, some magical place that might have stored that.
Yeah, I'm looking at the menu on Outlook. I don't know. I mean, there's a place that says get help and stuff. I don't know.
I would expect Outlook to have somewhere. So it's blank. You don't have any context on Outlook now.
Not now. No, yeah. I'm afraid to start rebuilding. I mean, I've been adding. The phone is up to date now.
Well, your phone will let you export it as well. You know, so do that.
Well, I'm afraid. Well, but that's the problem. When I sync contacts now, like you said, the calendar and mail work. When I hit sync contacts, it doesn't change. Nothing goes from the phone to the account.
Oh, that's interesting.
I mean, it's like the contacts are cut off now.
That's really interesting.
Import or export to Outlook. I sync, and it says it's synced, but it's not doing anything.
Wow, that's very interesting. Yeah, you want to reset your sync. You know what? Try calling Microsoft support. They may have a button that they can push. I bet they do. That's not immediately available to you. That you can. That they could say, oh, yeah, we'll restore that for you.
How do I get a hold? I've tried to go to the thing. I've looked. I can't get them online. I can't get them. There are no phone numbers.
Well, you know, sometimes with a free service, they don't offer very good support. But I think Microsoft, of all people, should have a support, because there's plenty of other Microsoft services that...
Okay, so I'll go after... Because I wasn't sure if I should go after HTC or Microsoft.
No, I would call Microsoft, because you're storing it on Microsoft. There's a Contact Us button at the bottom. Actually, you know what? A good way to do it, and often they do this, is they have chat. And that's usually, for me, a better way, because you don't have to sit there on hold for hours.
All right.
I would just say, if you go to support.microsoft.com, you can open up a chat. And at least I bet you they have a button that they can push that says, oh, yeah, we'll restore it back to a previous date.
Well, I hope so. I really do.
I would try that for sure. Yeah.
All right. Support.microsoft.com?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, the part you're not doing the paid Outlook. This is the free version.
Yeah, this is free.
Yeah, but they want you to be you're using Windows. You're a customer, believe it or not. You are a customer. So they might give you some help there.
I've just never had this problem. And like I said,
no, you're right.
The mail and the contact have always worked great for some reason.
Yeah, you know, you're right. It shouldn't happen. Doesn't mean it won't. You're right.
All right, Leo, I appreciate all your help.
My
Thank
pleasure.
You. You
Take
got
care.
A great show.
Thank you,
I really
sir.
Really enjoy it.
Thanks for listening. Take care.
Bye-bye. Anyway.
Yeah, syncing is fraught with peril, isn't it? Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. I'm the tech guy. Yeah, we talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We talk about smartphones. We talk about smart watches, self-driving cars. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you have a question or you may want to make a comment or a suggestion, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. And we have many listeners, thanks to the free and open internet all over the world, except places where the internet is not free and open, like China and Russia and Turkey. Actually, I think we even have listeners there. If you're calling from one of those places, you can always use Skype or some other voice to, internet voice to phone service and call 8888-ASK-LEO. We'd love to hear from you. Moving on to our next call, and that's Shirley in Laguna Niguel. Hi, Shirley.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Finally got to talk to you.
Woohoo! I'm sorry. Sorry it takes so long. I appreciate your patience.
No, Verizon dropped my call, and I lost it. I lost my place
nuts.
In line.
Oh, rats. Well, I'm glad you called back. Thank you.
Me too. And you're my last hope, as with some other callers.
Okay.
This is what happened. I have a Samsung Galaxy S7, and I use a Motorola H720 Bluetooth earpiece, which I love because it does not go inside your ear. I can't stand the other one.
Ah, nice.
And I've used it for years. My husband uses one. We love it. When the Nougat update happened in March, all of a sudden, my Bluetooth doesn't work right. When I
push
the
button,
I'll call, you know, from the earpiece, and I say, call William.
Yeah.
It says, calling William, mobile, and then it says, on speakerphone, and it switches it on to my, which I don't want.
Yeah.
So, I've tried calling Samsung, Verizon, and Motorola, and none of them give me any help that works.
Yeah, Bluetooth, I'm tempted just to blame Bluetooth because Bluetooth has all sorts of weird issues like this. But that doesn't seem like the right thing to do. And it's interesting that it changed it when you upgraded Android to Nougat, which is of course.
And I researched on the internet, and I see tons of people saying the same thing that there's all kinds of issues. Yeah, with the Pixel, with the Google phones. And also Samsung, that there's all kinds of Bluetooth issues since that Nougat update. So it's not just me. Yeah.
So there is an issue tracker page, which is where they put bug reports for these kinds of issues on wireless settings. And including, and if it happens on the, as it appears to be on the Google phones as well, then that means it's not likely a Samsung issue. But it's more so. One thing I would try is removing the headset, the Motorola headset, from the Bluetooth. You know, forgetting it and starting over. Have you tried that?
Yeah, I disconnected it. You know, unpaired it. I bought a brand new A720.
Oh no!
Tried that. That doesn't work. I have another model, cheaper headset from Motorola. That doesn't work.
Okay. Good. That was step one.
Okay.
Step two, there is, and I don't know if it's on Samsung. It's for sure on the Google Pixel. In when you go to backup and reset in the settings, there's a network settings reset. And that resets. Now, this is more dramatic, so it's not the first thing you should try. But if that first thing didn't work, so that will reset Wi-Fi, mobile data, and Bluetooth. Everything will be reset. And a lot of people think this helps this Bluetooth issue with Nougat. So, and that's not, you know, a big operating system upgrade sometimes, which Nougat is, sometimes that causes issues that resetting, you know, eliminating previous versions of the operating system's settings can fix. So that's another way to do it.
So it's a backup and reset network settings, but you don't know whether Samsung has...
It's in backup and reset in the settings.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have my Samsung in front of me, so I can't tell. But just try this anyway. It should have something like this. And on the standard Android versions, it's in backup and reset. And then there's a network settings reset. That doesn't reset your data. It doesn't, you know, below that's the factory data reset. You don't want to do that. That'll wipe the phone. Although that would be step three. If step two doesn't work.
Yeah, is that called rerouting or something?
Yeah,
it
wipes the phone and starts over. And that's probably not what I would recommend. But resetting the network settings resets all the Bluetooth settings. Now, you'll have to repair everything and you'll also have to enter your Wi-Fi password once again and all that. It's not a bad thing.
Okay.
Not a bad thing to do once in a while, though, I have to say.
That's
the next thing to try.
Okay.
Sometimes, you know, I have to say I have all sorts of issues with Bluetooth. I have an iPhone and Apple's AirPods, so it's an all Apple solution. And in the middle of a phone call, I'm talking to my daughter. All of a sudden, I look at my phone because she can't hear me. I can't hear her. And it's just decided to take it away from the AirPods and put it on the phone just randomly. Mm-hmm. Similar okay. problem, right? It's just.
Yeah.
And I have to think that Apple, look, it's an all Apple solution. Apple's not at fault here. It's most likely just a problem with the way Bluetooth works. Bluetooth is funky, you know, and Apple.
I never had this. In years. I've been using this headset for years. And until this update, I've never, ever had this issue.
So there may be an intermediate step. Our chat room is suggesting, thank you, Dr. Mom, is suggesting restarting the phone. So turning it all the way off and all the way on again. And see if that fixes it, at least temporarily. So that would be less draconian, less extreme than resetting the network settings. So... You already did the forget and repair, and you even bought a new one, new headset. So let's not do any of that. We've tested that. You turn the phone all the way off and on again. That's a reboot. Sometimes, as with all computers, a reboot fixes things. But if that still doesn't, go ahead.
Now, what I've been doing temporarily, because I'm usually in the car. I'm a pet sitter, so I'm dog walking. I have to be on Bluetooth. I can't hold the phone.
You're holding 18 dogs. You can't be holding the phone.
So what I do is when I need to call my other people that work with me, I push the button, I call them. As soon as I hear that it's going to speaker, I immediately push the button on my Bluetooth and hang up. And then I push the button again and hold it, and it redials the call automatically, and then it'll stay on.
And it stays on.
So that's what I do.
Yeah, that sounds to me like it's not the headset, it's not the phone, it's just Bluetooth. I would try this network settings reset.
Okay.
Yeah, and see if that helps.
Do you think that they'll come out with a fix for this?
They might, although Nougat now has been out almost a year. We're already ready to go to the next version, Android O. We don't know if it'll be Oreo or what. But, so Nougat is it's current, the current version, and they do slowly put out fixes. Samsung's not famous, by the way, for updating it. I think you're still on 7.0. Whereas the Google phones are 7.1.2. There have been a number of updates that Samsung hasn't applied. So it may be there's even a fix that just Samsung hasn't done yet. But I don't know. This doesn't sound like a universal problem. So it might be something that's just local to your phone and resetting it. I'm crossing my fingers.
It's really annoying.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. Believe me, it's annoying when my iPhone decides that, oh, no, you weren't using those AirPods, were you? And Apple has built a dedicated chip and has done all this stuff to kind of fit. Even Apple said, we fixed Bluetooth. But, Bluetooth resists the fix. Bluetooth is
And I'm not going to switch because I'm an Android user and I was going to switch. I'm there. Maybe if I went to an iPhone, I wouldn't have
Yeah, you've spent enough money. Okay. Yeah, let's get this work. Try this network settings reset.
Okay, I will. Thank you so much.
Hey, it's nice to talk to you, Shirley. Thanks for hanging on. Leo Laporte. The Tech Guy. And if you have a solution, if you're sitting here listening and going, oh, I got an idea, 8888, ask Leo. That's the number. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. Sybil says, put your Bluetooth under your pillow at night, and the Bluetooth fairy will give you a new update. Yeah. There are apparently a number of Bluetooth issues because I'm seeing a number of articles. Reboot into safe mode and then back. It's the equivalent of taking three steps in a clockwise direction, three steps in a counterclockwise direction, and then sacrificing a chicken. It's voodoo. But we all do it with our computers. And so this issue with Bluetooth not working, everybody's got a different little voodoo dance they do to get their phone working again. Dr. Mom says, every time I take a shower, I restart my Google Pixel XL. You know, you just press and hold the power button, you select restart. A number of websites are suggesting a double restart. And again, this could have nothing to do with it. But the double restart is you press and hold the on-off button, and then you press and hold power off, which pops up on the screen, until it says go reboot in safe mode. Then you reboot in safe mode, and then once that's done, then you reboot one more time in normal mode. I don't know why that would work. I don't know why, but some people say that. Okay. Reboot to safe mode. So I'm going to try. I don't have the problem, so I don't know why I'm doing this, but just to kind of, for sympathy, do you want to reboot in a safe mode? This will disable all third-party applications. By the way, this is a useful thing to know. So you press and hold the on-off switch. It will look different probably on a Galaxy phone because they have to change everything, but the default way to do it on Android 7 is you press and hold the on-off switch until you get the power-off restart button. You press and hold the power-off button until it says reboot to safe mode. Then you say okay. And that's gonna do kind of a reset. It makes sense, though, if you think about it. Remember, these smartphones are just computers. How often, you know, have you gotten an upgrade for Windows? Let's say the Windows 7 to Windows 8 or the Windows 8 to Windows 10. And now everything kind of doesn't, you know, not everything works right. It's kind of a little funky. I always say this. Do a clean install. If it doesn't work right, do a clean install. Start, you know, erase the phone and start fresh, because a lot of times little bits and pieces hanging over from the old operating system interfere with the new operating system. And then after you do that, click your shoes together 5 times and say, there's no place like home. There's no place like home. Terry in Santa Rosa Beach, Florida. Hello, Terry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How are you doing, Leo?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, I'm miserably hot in a very sweaty part of the panhandle.
Oh, man.
So my question is this. I'm a bit of a nerd and a geek, so I like to do gaming things, both tabletop gaming, computer gaming, classic games, all kinds of stuff like that. What I'm hoping is that I can try and find some kind of a monitor, TV, whatever, that I could put horizontally inset into a table and then use some program to draw on so that I can do different things with different games.
So you mean, like, remember the when Pac-Man first came out, it came out with a portrait mode screen, and you could get, and sometimes you go to a bar and it'd be embedded in the table there, and you could sit there with your drink and like that?
Well, something similar to that, yeah, where it lays out parallel to the ground.
Yeah.
And you can, say, for example, I was playing Dungeons & Dragons. I could draw a map on it.
Oh, wouldn't that be cool?
And then use that surface as my map instead of having to draw it out. Or if I'm playing cards, I could use it to keep tally marks of, you know, whatever I need to keep.
Yeah, that was actually, Microsoft released a product like that. When the iPad first came out about 6-7 years ago, Microsoft said, no, oh, wait, we got something very similar called the Surface Table.
Right.
We just, you know, it was kind of goofy. You might have seen some. I've seen them in casinos and hotel lobbies. I saw one on a cruise ship. And I don't know if you remember the demo of the Surface Table, but if you put your camera on it, for instance, it would pair up and then would show all the pictures fanning out from the outline of your camera. That's kind of what you're talking about?
Something similar to that, yeah. I mean,
you need to have software that, you know, so there's two parts to this. There's a hardware part and there's a software part. You can, it's easy enough to get a touchscreen computer that you can embed in a table. I use, and I love, it's a little pricey, the Surface Studio. This is Microsoft's all-in-one that will almost lie flat. It'll lie to a 17-degree angle, which feels like a drafting table a little bit. It's big screen, and you can draw on that. But then the second part would be you'd need software that understood you were drawing a Dungeons & Dragons map.
Well, not necessarily. All you'd have to do is have a basic draw program.
Oh, okay. So you'd be happy if you could just sketch it out and leave it there.
Correct.
Yeah.
That way, you know, you can draw a specific portion of what you need to do and then blow it up so whoever's looking at it can only see part of what you've drawn.
Yeah. It's a shame because the Surface Studio starts at $3,000.
Yeah.
And it is wonderful. I'm a big fan. I use one all the time for our shows. But it's you can't justify $3,000 for this. You're paying mostly for the screen. So there certainly are.
I've seen stuff like that for architectural
Cintiq
CAD programs.
So the Cintiq, which Wacom makes, Wacom, is a very expensive seven. I don't remember what the biggest size is. It's not huge, but a screen that you draw on. It's like a palette as an artist. So there are certainly touch screens, and frankly, maybe the easiest way to do this. How big do you want that screen to be?
I don't have a necessary dimension, but something like a dinner table, if you could put it in the center of a dinner table.
Right.
Or something around
it. I mean, one thing you could do is get the largest iPad, the 12.9-inch iPad. That would do it, right? And just embed it in your table.
Well, I was thinking about a little bit bigger than that.
The bigger you get, like a
27-inch monitor or something.
Well, there are absolutely 27-inch touchscreen monitors. You'd have to, this is a little bit of a maker project where you'd build a table, or at least you wouldn't have to build the table. You cut a hole in the table, and underneath it, you'd mount a computer that was connected to the monitor. I've seen many, people have built, gaming cabinets, the same idea. So really, the cost of this is determined by the cost of the screen.
Right.
Because the rest of it is pretty easy. You'd get an Intel NUC would work really well. Those are the little, they're just tiny little computers that you could Velcro to the bottom of the table and then connect it to the monitor. That wouldn't be very. So I'm looking at 27-inch touchscreens. The Cintiq, they do make a 27-inch. It's almost $2,000. But Dell offers a number of touchscreen monitors that are not nearly as expensive under $500. Let's see. Now, many of these have stands and arms, but in most cases, if you look on the specifications, if they say it's Visa mount, VESA mount compatible, that means you can remove the stand. And that's what you'd need. You'd be able to remove the stand. So I would look. Dell makes some very good inexpensive monitors. See if you can find a touch screen in the size you want. Monoprice apparently sells them too. Monoprice.com. I'm using right now, I think, a Monoprice 30-inch monitor. So they're out there. And then it's a little bit of a project. Embed it in the table and attach a computer to it. Windows, I think, would be a good choice. Macintosh doesn't support touch, but Windows does. Put Windows 10 on there. Embed it on there. Connect it to the monitor. Yeah, I think that's a very doable. It'd be a very cool project. Look at Instructables.com. Maybe somebody's already done it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The Cintiq is, of course, higher resolution, and that's why you pay so much.
Right.
I don't know. If you could just use a computer to do this and you just want it to lie flat, then I think you've got some good, relatively inexpensive choices. I don't know if the...
Yeah.
I'd have to see if the Dells are touch.
Yeah. Well, the extension to all of this is I have traveled a lot in my lifetime. I have friends that are scattered to the four winds. And if it's possible to play games on a monitor type surface like that, it might also be possible to play remotely with a bunch of different people.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah. So instead of, having to...
So they would see what you're sketching.
Everybody. Yeah.
So you want to... This is a really interesting... So you want to play D&D with remote players?
Correct.
Interesting.
Well, not just remote players, but I mean, like I said, if I could draw it out and then hide part of the dungeon, and as players get to wherever they are in the dungeon, then they would be able to be visible. I would be able to open it up or reveal whatever's there as needed, not like put a whole bunch of pieces of paper over a cloth map that I've drawn.
Love this idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's basically taking D&D geeking to the next level.
So somebody in the chat room has sent me, and you'll find this on CNET, the Ultimate Dungeons & Dragons table features embedded monitor. So there are people building these. They've got a video of it, but what they say is these are super fan builds, they call them. This is Super Fans Builds is a YouTube channel, Super-Fan-Builds. And you can see what they've done, which is a D&D table, almost exactly as you describe.
Right. Okay. I'll check it out.
Yeah. And this is it's a typical kind of maker thing, right? That you're going to combine existing hardware. I love the remote stuff, and that's a software solution. The idea of having
Because, I mean, I've heard of a lot of people playing through Skype where they'll have, right. you know, several members around the world. And a lot of the guys that I know are also military members, so they could be deployed, you know, and this is a way to keep them, you know, entertained while they're away.
I love this idea.
You know, there's a lot of applications.
Oh, my God. This could be a business, right? Remote D&D. Because there are, you know, the truth is there are some people who are just master dungeon masters.
And
wouldn't you love to be able to play with, like, the best dungeon masters out there? It would be so much fun.
Oh, exactly. I mean, I've been playing this game since 1982.
Yeah. So, obviously, you're fairly accomplished.
Right. I love playing this game. It is, even though I'm into my 40s now, it's a big part of what I do. I still have games that I play with people. I love teaching the game to new players. You know, it's a great way to broaden a person's imagination and pull introverted people out of their shell. I mean, it's a great experience. And I've even heard of psychologists using it as a tool to engage with people who have real world issues.
I love it. So there are, you know, we're going to put some links in the chat room. I mean, the website, techguylabs.com. Look at this super fan build. I'm looking at it. It's a beautiful tabletop D&D solution. Software is your biggest going to be. It wouldn't be too complicated to figure out how to do this. It's software is going to be an interesting challenge,
right?
Because that's the remote angle on this. But this is pretty.
Exactly.
This is crazy. I mean, they built the table to look, you know, like, you know, straight out of a, you know, a dungeon, which is awesome.
Right, and you could do it for any different genre, whether your genre is a space genre or horror.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I love this idea. Superfanbuilds.org. And then somebody's saying overclock.net has a similar idea as well. I like this. Well, I really like this idea. I think this would be a real boon to, as you say, service members and, you know, people who would like to play the game but aren't nearby. That's great. Good luck.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right.
Be good if he does this. We'll plug it. Hey, we're going to get back to the Tech Guy in just a second. I got to remind you, though, you're a geek, right? Right? You must be. You listen to the Tech Guy show, right? So I'm thinking, if you're going to get a home loan, you're ready to buy a new house or maybe refi your existing house, you probably would like to do it all online, right? Can I recommend Quicken Loans, the best mortgage lender in the country, and their new Rocket Mortgage is the entirely online mortgage approval process. And because it's all online, because it's all on computers, it's fast. Really fast. The mortgage experience, Quicken Loans realized, just wasn't keeping up with the times. Dated, needed a client-focused technological revolution. That's what Quicken Loans is all about, and they created Rocket Mortgage. What I like is not only is it fast, but it's transparent. You know exactly what's happening. You don't have to go through boxes of paperwork to get your pay stubs or your bank statements. They have, you know, relationships with all the financial institutions, so they could do it with a touch of a button. You will completely know what you're up to. You could choose the term and the rate and all that stuff. Everything's in there. You can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. And the thing is, it just takes a few minutes. You literally could do this at an open house. Whether you're buying your first home or your 10th, actually, I think people who bought homes before really appreciate it because they've been through this process and it used to be painful. Rocket Mortgage performs thousands of calculations in seconds based on your income and your assets and your credit. They're going to pick the right loan for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, that's important, and mortgage confidently. To get started, just go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy, rocketmortgage.com/techguy, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, of course, and MLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. Quicken Loans, best lender in the country, and Rocket Mortgage for geeks like us. Check it out at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. We thank them for making the Tech Guy possible. What a great idea. I love this idea. Build a Dungeons & Dragons computer table. Actually, it's been done. I didn't realize this. The chat room passed along a website called Super Fan Builds, and they have a YouTube video. They built a gorgeous Dungeons & Dragons gaming table. So it's totally doable. Be a nice project. A lot of fun. People still play Dungeons & Dragons, I guess. I wonder if there's been a resurgence thanks to that TV show. What was it? Stranger Things? Strange Things on Netflix. Did you see that? It's a very 80s themed TV show with a kind of a spooky horror theme. But it begins with a group of kids, Goonie-style kids, who are playing real Dungeons & Dragons out of the 80s. And it's really fun. I think there might be it's a social event. Instead of sitting in your darkened basement playing a video game with somebody else on the internet, get together, have a party. Wonder how widespread D&D is. I know when I go to game stores and hobby stores in this area, there's often in the back gaming going on. They do, you know, Magic the Gathering on Wednesdays and D&D on Thursdays and things like that. So I think I have a feeling there's still quite a few people still playing these old style tabletop non-computerized adventure games. Stephen in L.A., that was Stephen in L.A. Let's go to Terry in Long Beach. Hi, Terry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I've got a quick question.
Yes.
I installed a Luma, a mesh system in my house.
Oh, you got one. I tried to get one. This is Amazon was a big investor in it, and for some reason they canceled my order. So they're out now.
Really?
Yeah, the Lumas. Well, okay.
You mentioned it on your program about a little over a year.
Yeah, I pre-ordered, and then Amazon canceled it. I guess they were delayed.
Really?
Yeah. So you got one?
No problem getting it.
Oh, I think you can get it now. Yeah, I think it was just because I pre-ordered it before it was out. So this is very comparable to all the other mesh router solutions that are out there now, right?
Is it? Because I have Frontier BIOS. And I get 100 megabits upload and download. And throughout my house on the Wi-Fi, I get true 100 megabits or more upload and download, except for my master bedroom. And I was not able to get much more than 30 or 40 megabits upload and download in the bedroom. And I thought, well, I'll just buy another module. So I did. And evenly spaced out the modules throughout my house, and I still can't get improved reception. I called Luma support, and they indicated to me that the base station and the satellites need to be closer together. And I thought that Luma or any mesh router system was supposed to be like a daisy chain, that as long as you kept the modules close to each other, they would pick up a strong signal.
Yeah, in theory, that's how mesh is supposed to work, that you could daisy chain it on down, you can go for miles, and they'd hand it off. But my suspicion is these, and I think it's true of all of them, you could include Eero and Orbi and Plume and all of them. My suspicion is it's more like a star than it is a daisy chain. And what you're saying, they told you, kind of confirms it. The way these work, that's a little bit different than using a Wi-Fi extender. So in the old days, you'd have a base unit, and then you'd go out and buy extenders, right? The problem with the extenders is they were using the same data channels as you were. So an extender instantly would reduce your Wi-Fi speed in half, because half the time it's communicating with the base unit, half the time it's communicating with you. These units have... or supposed to have, typically, a back channel that is independent of the channel you're using that they use to exchange data. And I agree with you. I think that mesh implies that it's not a star system. I use one of the systems I've tried is called Plume, P-L-U-M-E, and they show you, they're the only one I know of that shows you the topology, the actual who's talking to whom. And in the case of Plume, you're absolutely right. It can be a daisy chain. You have a central system, but that central system is talking to routers, which then are passing it along. So, for instance, you know, I've got the router in the living room, and it's talking to the kitchen, and the kitchen is talking to the den, as opposed to the living room talking directly to the den, just as you describe it. So I know that some of them do it this way. But as far as I know, the only one that shows you its actual topology, at least in all the software I've used, and I've used most of these, I haven't used the Luma yet, they don't show you what they're doing, so you can't be sure. Plume's great because they even show you when you look at devices, what frequency the device is on and which one it's using. So I've been using this a lot to look at how they, and they optimize and they move stuff around. So I'm not sure about the Luma. So I mean, I'd have to defer to their own tech support. If they say it's, so they're saying it's how close the end unit is to the base unit.
Yeah.
So it's a star configuration.
Yeah, apparently so. I've tried different repeaters Luma. I'm really pleased with it in the sense that my whole house has what has the full internet speed, same as what I would get if I was on just Ethernet hardwired. Right.
Well, that's very good. That's unusual, even on regular Wi-Fi. That's very good. But so that's an interesting point, because it really doesn't solve the problem if they all have to be close to the central unit.
Exactly.
I remember, you know what? I do remember Eero saying the best place to put your base station is in the middle. And so that implies that it is also a star. And I don't know, because
my house is, the way my house is hardwired, Ethernet router is on one end of the house and the master bedroom's on the other. However, I think there is some wiring that comes up in the middle of the house underneath the flooring. I might call Frontier and have them come out,
That's always the best way to do that. If you could put it, and many, I don't know how Luma works, but many of these systems, Eero's an example, have two Ethernet ports, and you could plug one of the remote Eero's into this, as long as it's the same network, into an Ethernet, and that would really improve overall coverage. So that does imply then that it's not merely a star, because you can have hard wires into some of the Eero's as well. It's interesting. This is such a new area, and most of these companies are pretty cagey about what they're doing. They don't want you to, they say mesh, but you described how a mesh should work, which is a daisy chain, a handoff.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound like yours is doing that. Although it might be that, the reason they don't do that is because it would degrade the signal. Each handoff in the chain would be a little bit slower. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the Lumas are doing.
Can I put in a plug for Apple?
Absolutely.
I'm a retired IBM IT professional, and when I retired, I got rid of all my Microsoft and IBM equipment and converted over to Apple, because years ago, when I was studying operating systems on...
you use BSD, probably, right? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I worked on mainframe computers of all types,
right,
and had dumb workstations, dumb monitors connected to it. And then the PC came along, and Apple came along, and we started using those as workstations to connect to the mainframes. So I had to dabble
I got
to
take a break. Hang on a second, okay? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sorry, Terry. Commercials don't... Okay. They never end. So you used the Max's dumb terminals.
Yeah. Using a software system called MQ series, which would connect all sorts of computers together. But the main thing is that I switched over to Apple and never looked back.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in the business, I was constantly solving problems with interconnectivity and et cetera, and hardware problems, software problems. And it turned my hair gray before time. But since I've been retired, I absolutely love Macintosh. I love Apple. And it had no problems whatsoever.
I don't know if you've stayed in touch with Big Blue, but you know that last year they started letting employees choose which the operating system they wanted, PC or Mac. And there's been this huge kind of tectonic shift. And they're using more Macs all the time. And last year they reported that it was three times more expensive for them to manage the PCs than the Macs.
Exactly.
So your experience is exactly right.
It's part of the reason why I retired early, because it was just slow to come around to just sheer logic. It's like years ago, when I looked at the operating systems, there was something that you know, best described as handles. Every time you would start a task on a machine, they would grab a handle, and when it was finished with the task, it would let it go. Well, on the Microsoft and the IBM operating systems, it wouldn't truly release the handle to be reused, but the Mac system did.
Nice.
Just that little nuance made the Mac such a superior system that you don't have to reboot, because there's always a new recycled handle to use.
Yeah, that's a memory leak, basically, if you don't release the handles when you're done. Yeah. Hey, I have to run, but it's really a pleasure to talk to you, Jerry. Thank you so much.
And thank you very much.
I appreciate your time. And let you know if you. I don't know what the answer is with your Luma, but I think that you've pinpointed the problem. And since you're an IT guy, I think you understand the problem. There are other solutions. I don't know. You've already spent hundreds of dollars on your Lumas, but the Plumes are at least one that do true mesh routing.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Hey, pleasure talking to you. Take care. Bye-bye. The Plumes overall, according to Jim Salter, who's the network guru who wrote the reviews on the Wirecutter, are slower. He says the fastest is the Orbi, but Orbi really isn't a mesh system. I think Eero made massive improvements with the Eero Pros, the new Eeros. I think they're a lot better, but you know, your mileage may vary. You don't have this problem because Gisneyland is about 8 square feet.
That is exactly right. The mesh I use is the screen in the window, and I strain my Wi-Fi signal right through that.
You know, filtering your Wi-Fi is always a good idea. Get the potatoes and the lumps out.
Yeah. Right. No, I bounced the Wi-Fi signal off my mirrored ball, and it sends it into all the rooms.
We should send you the disco ball. You know, we have the old giant. It was this big disco ball from the brick house. It's been in storage for a year. And Lisa finally said, guys, are you ever going to use this? Well, probably not. Well, get it out of there. We're paying hundreds. This is like you in the warehouse.
Yes, being my very clever retirement plan. Exactly.
Did we give away the no, we got plans for the disco ball? All right. They found a home.
Thank God, because I have two disco balls in the
warehouse.
Don't
need another. You don't need more balls? Oh, yeah. Right.
No, I don't. I got plenty.
We should. He's the hardest working man in show business, Dick D. Bartolo, Mad's maddest writer. Watch me now. Hello, Dickie D.
How are you?
That should be your theme song. That is your theme song.
That is right good. There. Yes.
Dick is Mad's maddest writer. He was anointed such, we talked about it last week, by the great Bill Gaines, Mad's legendary editor for so many years. But he's also, we call him the Gizwiz because he's a gizmo wizard. He brings us great gadgets every week. Hi, Dick.
Hi. Yeah, I have a gadget that I have not used but found out about at CE Week. So in New York City, mid-year, they have CE Week put on by CES, the folks who put on CES in Vegas in January. And Logitech was there. And perhaps you know about this, that Logitech has a 4K webcam.
Ooh.
It's called the Brio. Now, the guy there said, if you want to use 4K, you need to have Skype for Business, and you have to make sure that you're using USB 3.0. Has two built-in microphones. It has background noise reduction. It also drops down to 1080p if you want, and also 720p.
Yeah, because most of the time you wouldn't, 4K, you'd have to have a lot of extra bandwidth floating.
Yeah, exactly. And I was talking to this with Chad Johnson, who co-hosts the show, The Giz Whiz, and he said he loves to Brio, and that's what he uses for his Minecraft show.
Oh, I bet. Because this is close to a studio camera. It even has lights on it.
Well, not lights on it.
Oh, what is the Right Light 3 with HDR? What is
that? You know, Leo, that's their automatic adjusting system. Pff,
I thought there were lights on it.
Oh. No.
Well, that's no good. I want to come and sit down and have the lights come on.
Oh, yeah. Well, not quite yet. But it does have – it's also their first infrared camera. Ooh. So if you're using Windows Hello with –
Oh, it works with that. Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it works with that. It's built in. So retail manufacturers suggested retail is $199. I see it already on Amazon for $179.
Yeah, Logitech's known for discounting over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So if you want 4K, or if you want to say you have a 4K capable webcam, look for the Brio.
You'd have to have a lot of bandwidth, and the other person on the other end would have to have a lot of bandwidth. And that's interesting because most people are not using Skype for business. They're using the consumer grade Skype. So you'd also have to, do you have to pay for Skype for Business?
Skype for Business has two plans. One is cheapy, one is $2 a month.
All right.
And then the expensive plan is $350 a month, which for business, what is that?
That's nothing. Yeah.
No, exactly. Exactly.
We're going to see 4K everywhere. I mean, the cameras are cheap. The problem is, you know, if you're using it on your Wi-Fi or you're streaming it in the internet, it uses a lot of bandwidth.
Oh, yeah. I send out 1K at a time, and then I just say, put this together your end.
You're joking, but we've come a long way. Remember 300 baud modems?
My gosh. What are you kidding? I'll never forget. I remember saying to Dennis, I used to write a monthly boating column, which was four typed pages.
Yeah.
Double spaced. and I would call on my modem, and I would say to Dennis, you're not going to believe this, but in 2 minutes...
Wow.
This column is going to be in California.
Incredible.
I know.
We take this all for granted, but this stuff is changing so fast. Yeah. It takes old timers like us to remind those young whippersnappers. You know, used to be 4K, used to be no K. In my day, you need really reasonably to get a 4K stream in good quality. You need 25 megabits. Up and down. Very few people have 25 megabit upstream. That's rare. So
yeah.
That's why.
The highest I've gotten is 23 here.
Up?
Up, yeah.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I have 300 down and
that's
and
pretty good. But you wouldn't reliably be able to do 4K.
No. But, you know, one of the most tech things we ever did, Leo, is when Good Morning America did the 40-year anniversary thing. Oh, I was here in my studio. You were out there with Becky.
Yeah.
They were in the studio in New York, but they were switching it from the control room down in Times Square. That was an amazing thing.
Now, lest you think we were actually on Good Morning America, that was on the internet at 3 a.m.
Yeah, exactly. But it was part of the 40 hours.
It was part of their, we were in the middle of the night part of the 40-hour celebration.
Yeah, exactly.
3 a.m. your time, right? It was midnight my time.
Yeah,
Dickie exactly. D, you'll find him at gizwiz.biz. That's his website, gizwiz.biz. You can play the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. And he's got information about everything he talks about, not only on this show, but on ABC World News Now and all the other places he appears. And it's all there at gizwiz.biz. And he does a great podcast, soon to be in 4K.
Yes. We have it scheduled for 2070.
You'll find that at gizwiz.tv. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. Take care. Bye.
Take care. To Los Angeles we go. Steven is on the line. Hi, Steven. Welcome.
Hello. I wonder if you could explain something to me.
All right.
I have a Indian company that has been working on my computer for years and tuning it up, et cetera, et cetera. About 6 months ago, I got a virus, and I paid a lot of money for them to add new software on my computer to take off the virus. Then 2 months later, I got another virus, and they took it off, and they said, you know, you'll never have to pay any more money to get anything taken off. Now I got another virus, and they're saying to me, well, they're getting into your computer through your IP address.
Not so.
And
that's not true.
And if you want to get, you need new software to get a new IP address.
It's time to cut the cord with these guys.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. Yeah. And can you recommend a company that could check my computer? Is there a company that you feel is a reputable company?
This is a challenge because there. Yeah, I don't know. There are companies that do this. The problem is almost anybody. It's worse than psychotherapy. You know, in psychotherapy, anybody can hang up a shingle and say, "Yeah, I'll be your counselor." And there's unlike psychotherapy, where there's a licensing program, and you can say, "Well, let me see your license." There's no real way to say to a tech guy, "Are you licensed?" So you just, it's a question of finding the right person. I would never use somebody overseas. Use somebody local. Of course, the first place to go, Geek Squad at Best Buy. But there are other companies that do this. There used to be a, we used to have a sponsor that was in the LA area. And I'm trying to remember their name. And I can't. But yeah, there are good companies. It's hard to find a good one. What I would say is talk to them, interview them, ask to talk to existing clients, see how good they are. This is a real problem because I understand, you know, I don't use somebody, but I know what I've been doing this long enough. I'm the tech guy for crying out loud. And even I sometimes will need to go and talk to somebody or ask for some help. This stuff is complicated. So I think it's a good idea to find somebody. If you're not willing to do this yourself or you don't know how the skills or the time to do it, it's a good idea to find somebody. But boy, I wouldn't use somebody overseas. I'd use somebody nearby. And who knows, maybe this Indian company got sold and then the new ones are actually scammers. I don't know. But this story that your IP address is the problem, you need to buy software to change it, that's completely bogus. Completely. And so it's time to cut the cord with these guys. And I would change the credit card number too. I'm not kidding. But now we got to find somebody local. Go to your local computer store. At least they have a presence. And they have a reputation to maintain. Staples and Best Buy would be a great place to start. And we've got to find a way to you know, make this possible because people need this. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.